Okay, my mic's on. All right. I'm going to call this regular meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission to order. It's our regular meeting, our first meeting of the year. It's Thursday, January 12th, 2012. Ramon, will you please read the roll call?
Commissioner Irving.
Present.
Commissioner O'Grady.
Here.
Commissioner Murphy.
Here.
Commissioner Topping.
Here.
Chairperson Christensen.
Here. If you'll join me for the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. It's public comment period for items not on the agenda. Jason, I don't know if you're a public comment not on the agenda, but...
You know what? I'll just take the liberty right now. I did fill out a public comment form. Jason Giffen, director for the Department of Planning and Building. And I just want to take a moment, since this is our first hearing of the year, to look back and reflect and thank the commission for all their hard work, led by Chairwoman Christensen throughout 2011. We had plenty of high-profile and controversial items that came at you early and often in 2011, whether it be the solar projects, the Shandon Community Plan, numerous conditional use permits. We had a very successful year. We have three new commissioners come and serve, and I just want to take the opportunity to say thank you for the service. There's plenty of heavy lifting still to do now looking forward in 2011, and whoever you decide to choose as the succeeding chairman, I look forward to working with that person, as well as the rest of the commission for 2012.
Thank you very much, Mr. Griffin. And I agree, we had a long, hard year. We had a hugely long break for us, since we were having three or four meetings sometimes every month. So I'm sure everybody's come back with lots of good energy, and we are looking forward to our work this year, I'm sure, and we will continue on with... election of a new chair and vice chair. Mr. Topping.
Yes, along that line, Madam Chair, I'd like to nominate as our as for chair, Commissioner Dan O'Grady.
And I would like to second that.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
I guess.
All right. So Commissioner O'Grady will be our new chair. And now I'd like to call for nominations for vice chair.
I would like to nominate Commissioner Jim Irving.
All right. Do I hear a second?
I'll second it.
All right. Mr. Irving is nominated as vice chair. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, Mr. O'Grady is our new chair, and Mr. Irving is our new vice chair, and we're going to do a little...
We're going to play musical chairs
for a few minutes, a minute or two, and then we'll get into our agenda, I'm sure. So you move over.
Thank you very much. Yeah, right.
We get to torment you this year.
Yes. Well, I before we put a lid on 2011 and embark on the uncharted waters of 2012, I was going to make a few comments, but Director Giffen kind of did that. But on behalf of the four male members of the Planning Commission, I'd like to express our appreciation for chairwoman's leadership and service to the community last year as chair of our commission. You know, Carlin would never say this, but I imagine that sometimes trying to corral four unruly male commissioners was probably like herding cats. But
so once or twice.
It was probably well deserved. Okay, let's see. Where are we here on the agenda? We had the election. Now, Ms. Griffin, planning staff updates, please.
Wrong button. I'm out of practice, too.
Okay.
Cami Griffin, County Planning. The only thing I was going to provide you as part of staff updates is to give you kind of a glimpse into the next couple of meetings. Your next meeting is a regular meeting on January 26th, and it looks like you have a potentially a short day that day. There's only a few items on the agenda. However, the items might take some time, so there is the potential you'll go into the afternoon. Coming up in November, we've got just some...
February, maybe.
I mean, I'm sorry.
2012.
It's 2012. It's January. I'm still last year. Coming up in February, you do have two meetings on the 9th and the 23rd. They look to be pretty... the 9th meeting does not look very full. However, your February 23rd meeting looks fairly full. You do have a large project that's coming up, and that's the Acceleron project, and it'll probably be hitting your agenda either in late February or early March, so that's something to look forward to. You will be getting a big final EIR to read and a probably good-sized staff report, too. So that's all I had for staff updates, now that I know what month it is and what year it is.
Well, at least we'll try to keep all that straight this year. So, Commissioner Irving.
Cami, a couple of questions. Do you have a date on that final EIR?
No, I don't, but I can get that for you before you break for lunch.
Okay. And at some point in the next couple of meetings, I'd love to have a report from Ms. Carroll or anyone who is appropriate on the progress of the two solar projects, not just in terms of biology, but in terms of the employment numbers and things of that sort, make sure that they are on track with all the few conditions that we imposed on them. It would be good, I think, for us and also for the public to hear. Thank you.
We can schedule that on a future date and actually put it on your agenda.
Before we get to the consent agenda, I have one item of commission business. It has to do with ex parte, and I'd like to ask County Counsel, Ms. McDonald, maybe it was at the workshop when we were talking about whether discussions with staff needed to be disclosed as ex parte. The way I read the handbook, it defines ex parte more as discussions with parties in interest, either those who oppose or support the project. Could you clarify that for us, please, Ms. McDonald, as we start the new year?
Thank you. This is Whitney McDonald, County Council's office. The way we look at it, it depends on what type of project it is. If it's a quasi-legislative item, then there's less of an issue about discussions with staff, and I think you should feel free to correspond or call and talk directly. But if it's a quasi-adjudicative matter, such as a use permit, where we're looking at an individual's application for an entitlement, those types of conversations may not be called ex parte typically, but we consider them to be, you know, information gathering that's happening outside of the hearing context. And so we usually advise that those kinds of email correspondence be posted to the internet and at least given to the applicant so they're aware of what types of information has been provided to your commission.
So if on a project, which is quasi-judicial item, we call the a planner and we have some questions to and want to discuss their staff report, then we should disclose that as ex parte. Is that what you just said?
I think to the extent that there's an exchange of information, then yes, that would be a good idea to disclose.
Okay. Do other commissioners have any questions about that? Okay, very
Mr.
good.
Mr. Chair, just to let the commission know that it is our practice if we do provide any written information to a commissioner based on questions received before the meeting, that we do provide those to the applicant, and they are posted on our website.
Okay, thanks, Ms. Griffin. Okay, we come to the consent agenda, and I'd like to ask if any member of the public or the commission wishes to pull any item or speak on it. I think we need to pull items C and D because commissioners were absent for those two items, and I think we need to vote on them separately. So I'd like a motion to approve the consent agenda absent items C and D.
So moved.
Second.
I think we need to vote by roll call. Ramona?
For consent items A, B, and D, A, B, D, and E?
No, I think it's...
You pulled C and D.
Yeah, so it's A, B, and E we're voting on right now, A, B, E.
Okay, A, B, E.
Right.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Irving?
Aye.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairman O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes. Okay, and then item C, I had noticed that Commissioner Murphy was absent for part of the day, so may I have a motion to approve item C?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Irving?
Aye.
Commissioner Christensen?
Aye.
Commissioner Murphy?
No, abstain.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Grady?
Yes. And then item D, I had made a note that Commissioner Christensen was absent that day, so may I have a motion to approve item D?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, roll call, please.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
I'll abstain.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Grady?
Yes, motion passes. The next item on the agenda was item one. However, there's been a request to move up item three because item three is just a continuance request, so it will go quickly. Ramona, would you please introduce item three?
Continued hearing to consider an appeal by Todd Piggott of the planning director's determination that hot tubs are not allowed within a coastal bluff setback. County file number DTM 2011-00001, Supervisorial District 1, Nancy Orton.
Good morning, Commissioners. Nancy Orton, County Planning.
Good morning.
We need a little more time to hopefully resolve this issue, and if it can be resolved, then the appeal would be withdrawn. So that's the reason why we're continuing to work with the applicant and request the continuance.
Okay. Do commissioners have any questions about this request for a continuance?
I'll move to continue the item.
Do we have to view a date?
February 9th.
Yes, February 9th. I'll include that in the motion. So the motion should be, Mr. Murphy, to continue this item until February 9th, 2012. Thank you.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Ms. Orton. Okay, the next item is item one. And Ramona, would you please introduce item one?
Hearing to consider a request by Ted Molinex / Law Family Vineyards for a conditional use permit. County file number DRC 2010-00071. Supervisorial District 1, Holly Phipps, Project Manager.
Okay, Ms. Phipps, before the staff report, I would just like to ask commissioners if they have any ex parte to report.
Yes, thank you. I did meet with the applicant's consultant on site for a site tour on Monday of this week.
Thank you. Any other commissioners ex parte? I'd like to report that I had a conversation with Planner Holly Phipps about her staff report. Ms. Phipps, please proceed.
Thank you, Chairman and Planning Commission. Before us today is a request for a conditional use permit, request by Don Law of Law Family Vineyards. The applicant is requesting to construct an approximate 36,000 square foot winery that would include an approximate 1,600 square foot tasting room. The footprint is relatively small.
Bobby, can you get closer to the mic, please?
The footprint is relatively small because of the multi-level design, where the proposed height is 34 feet above average natural grade. The project would result in approximately 6 acres of grading. The applicant is anticipating building the winery all at once, but has asked to phase the project to allow more time to build the winery above what is required by ordinance standards. This project does not include any special events with amplified music. The proposed project is located on a 45-acre site on the south side of Peachy Canyon Road, approximately 4 miles west of the city of Paso Robles. The proposed project is located in the agricultural land use category and is located in the Adelaida planning area. Here we have an aerial image just to briefly show the site where the winery would be located. Access would be here's the existing road. The driveway entrance would be moved slightly to accommodate Public Works safety site distance requirements. Quickly, we'll look at the site plan. Again, you see the road where it was adjusted a little bit here, going up to the winery. The winery would be located here. Floor plan, this is kind of hard to see. Elevations, it's the multi-level design. It's cut into the hillside, and it's tucked in there pretty good. I submitted the other day some requested edits that I'd like to read into the record. Page 1-1, under assessor parcel number, please add comma and 033. So that would include both parcels. That would include the access road and the road and where the winery is located.
What page was?
1-1. On page 1-6, top of page in the findings, please delete Mullinex. This property was purchased after the project came in by Mr. Don Law. On page 1-7, condition 1, staff would like to modify the condition here. After number one, after the first sentence, please add wine production limited to 10,000 cases per year. Under bullet two, let's rephrase this condition to state phase one to be vested by 2017 based on the effective date of this permit in accordance with condition 34. Bullet four, phase two to be vested by 2022 based on the effective date of this permit in accordance with condition 34. Page 1-8, please delete condition 14. This condition is duplicated on page 114 as condition 46. Page 1-13, we had said this in an earlier condition, so we're just reiterating it again. So the end of number 30, let's add parentheses, including those outlined in fire safety plan dated August 15, 2011. Number 39, let's add in after shell, be chip sealed and delete remain unimproved or unpaved. And talking with the Agriculture Department, they were fine with chip seal. That met the requirement of, and they were happy with that. And we're trying to make a air pollution control district happy and cutting down their dust and helping them with their dust control measures. So this is just to clean that up a little bit.
Ms. Phipps, do we keep or utilize pervious?
Yes.
I'm sorry, pervious pavement. We keep that part?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I see. Thank you.
On page 115, after talking with County Council, they would like us to add a new condition 49 to read as follows. Prior to occupancy or final inspection, lot line adjustment COAL09-0038 shall be effectuated by a recordation of a parcel map or recordation of certificates of compliance. So we have yesterday, we had several letters of support that came in for the project, and additionally we had a letter that came in from Ogden and Fricks that had expressed some concerns.
Who is Ogden and Fritz? Those are, it sounds like a law firm.
It's a law firm.
Oh, okay.
So some of the issues that came up was regarding noise, and this aerial here shows that the closest noise receptor, there is a house right here and some houses located here, but this property is owned by Mr. Law now. The closest sensitive receptor is over 1,000 feet away. It's on the Manassian Young wine property, and they also have a winery here. Also located within a half a mile, we have several wineries, Gill, Nadeau, and Calcareous, and again, Manassian Young Winery. Let's see. The applicant is not requesting any special events, not having any big number of events where people come in. So with that, there's no amplified music proposed. When looking at Ag Policy 6, visitor serving and retail commercial use of the facilities allows visitor serving and facilities in agricultural areas that benefit ag processing. Ag Policy 8, intensive agricultural facilities allow development of intensive agricultural facilities to support local ag production, processing, et cetera. The square footage of this building may sound huge, but their case production is relatively small. It's 10,000 cases. So if you were to look at another winery, say Halter Winery, they're, if you look at everything that's on site, they're around 50,000 square feet for their winery, not including their outdoor crush pad areas and stuff like that. And they're processing up to 25,000 cases annually. So section 2210.120 of the noise standard section, noise from the ag processing is exempt from the noise ordinance. The winery ordinance doesn't come into play for the noise ordinance because they're not requesting amplified music with special events. So we would go back to we would rely on the noise ordinance. So a noise study was not requested because this winery is not located within close proximity to a noise receptor. No special events with amplified music has been proposed. Therefore, no significant noise impacts are anticipated and no additional mitigation beyond ordinance requirements were required. Lighting was another concern that was brought up. This is a very large building that could be seen from the hilltop. Condition 5 on page 1-7, the applicant is required to submit at the time of construction permit a lighting plan, and when this is submitted, staff looks at the plans to make sure they're in compliance with the winery ordinance. The winery ordinance states that the no exterior lighting shall be installed or operated in a manner that would throw light either reflected or directly in an upward motion, and we look at other standards too, shielded and downcasting and stuff like that. And then additionally, to follow up, we go out to the site, and sometimes we have to do nighttime visits. We have planners that live in the area, and they can swing by when they're requesting that their winery have a final inspection. So we have planners out in the field that will ask them to leave their lights on so we can see what it looks like at night. And if they don't comply, then we have asked applicants in the past to please redesign your lighting system. It's not working.
Isn't there also a condition pertaining to lighting?
Yes, yeah. There are two conditions.
Okay, two conditions.
Number 5 and 31.
Okay.
Another concern dealing with traffic was brought up that the project was not conditioned to require shuttles programs and incentives for the employee carpooling as recommended in the air pollution control referral response letter. As you know, our wine industry is pretty big, and as such, other businesses have been able to capitalize on the winery industry. And as such, if you go to Google and you type in wine shuttles, a whole list of shuttles for the area come up. So there's, you know, Wine Wrangler, the Wine Line Breakaway, Grape Line, et cetera. So there's, that is already there, so I didn't see that I needed to condition that because it's pretty in vogue now to use those services. Additionally, the applicant said, well, about all the employees using the road for carpooling, 10 to 15 employees, that's a relatively small number. We're looking at 5 to 10 trips. And, you know, ideally, you know, you could imagine a couple of them would like to carpool. I mean, so I didn't see that that was necessary to condition that. Regarding other traffic issues, Public Works reviewed the proposed project, and Mr. Marshall is here to talk on level of service, public safety, and et cetera. Also, Ms. Nall will address any visual concerns and the issues dealing with the kitchen.
Karen Nall with the Planning Division, if I could take over a little bit. The letter we got from a neighbor's attorney also questioned the size of the kitchen, and I wanted to explain what the trend is on wineries right now. In the past, wineries weren't putting in any type of commercial kitchen, but they were, through their industry-wide events, winemaker dinners that are part of the industry. It's part of marketing the wine. Our wineries, food and wine go together. The health department was encouraging wineries to put in certain levels of kitchens. This applicant is requesting a 376-square-foot kitchen we think is extremely reasonable in size. It won't be used as a restaurant. It will be used during their industry-wide events, winemaker dinners. I just wanted to clarify that. We have no problem with that size of kitchen. The project is conditioned to not use the kitchen as a restaurant. If a winery does want a restaurant, has to come before you through a CUP.
What about using the restaurant for catering? Will that be allowed in accordance with your condition? Or
yes, it could. So the kitchen, it's a catering-level kitchen, and the agent can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's the intent, is to use it during those industry-wide events. But
outside of industry-wide events, could it be a catering, use for catering all year long?
I guess so. Say you had a home occupation and you were making jam or something like that. I guess you could.
Okay. Well, we might explore that. The commission might explore that a little bit later then.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next topic that was raised was they quoted that the project will be highly visible from Peachy Canyon. The analysis we've conducted is that is absolutely not true. There's a couple small visions of the structure. The agent has the visual analysis on their presentation to show you, but we're comfortable with the analysis that we have done and believe the structure will not be highly visible. And that's all I had. And back to Holly.
And back to Glenn.
Back to Glenn.
Cheryl Grady, Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. I also reviewed the letter from Ogden Fix It arrived yesterday. And with respect to Public Works' review of the initial referral, we did look at the level of service of Peachy Canyon. It currently operates at a level of service A. And assuming worst-case conditions with the traffic generation proposed by this project, we did not see a change in level of service. Secondly, we looked at the collision history to see does it trigger any sort of off-site road improvements along Peachy Canyon. There was no significant collision history, meaning one standard deviation above county standard. And so that was, it did not have, there didn't appear to be any sort of reason to require any sort of road improvements to offset for potential collision history or potential impacts. Lastly, we looked at the driveway and we realized the driveway did not meet current county site distance standards. We requested that the applicant retain a civil engineer to put together a site distance study and provide us recommendations on where to relocate the driveway. They did that. These are addressed as the conditions for mitigations. Secondly, I guess in the letter from Mr. Fricks, he says the project will ultimately unreasonably and negatively impact the traffic, and he goes on to say that it may generate a volume and nature of traffic that is beyond the safe capacity of this particular road. Public Works, in our evaluation, does not agree with either of those statements. And I am here to respond to any questions you may have.
Mr. Irving?
excuse me. Glenn, what about the comment made in the Ogden letter about trucks getting stuck on the corners?
Sure. That's off-tracking. I looked through the county codes, and I did not see where we had any sort of restriction. So this is a public road. Any legal length loads is defined in the Caltrans Highway Design Manual. These trucks are allowed to use this road. There are no restrictions for it. It is, I know there, this road is an old farm-to-market road. It's been paved. It has a lot of tight turns in it, and it doesn't surprise me that trucks do off-track in certain areas. Usually truck drivers who use this regularly will make other alternative road means of accessing the sites that they need to access.
Do other commissioners have a question for Mr. Marshall? I just have one. You talked about volume of traffic, and the condition of the road isn't the best. What about weight limits and trucks carrying heavy loads of cases of wine? Is that something that you look at?
There is a weight limit, and there's a length limit, and a height limit, and a width limit. Those are all defined in the vehicle code as what you can take on a road. Anything beyond those limits, you need special permits, and in this case it would be through Public Works. We'd issue what we call a transportation permit.
So that's nothing the commission has to deal with in terms
of
this?
Not at all. It's already taken care of.
Thank you. Please proceed.
So with that, staff is recommending approval of this conditional use permit and requesting adoption of the negative declaration in accordance with CEQA based on the changes as read into the record and based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. And that concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you. Before we get to the applicant presentation, do commissioners have any further questions? I realize some questions are best asked right now, but anything else, if they could be deferred to when it comes back to the commission for discussion, appreciate that. Commissioner Murphy.
Well, I guess my question had to do with aesthetics and vision, and I don't know, we just had a picture up there on the screen. I don't know if we could bring it back. I'm not familiar with the area and haven't been out there, but the comment was made that it's not readily visible except from a few locations. I'm assuming that picture must be one of those locations, and that hilltop is readily visible. So I just want to kind of get clear in mind, is it visible from the road or not? Apparently it is from certain sections of the road. There's going to be screening done on site, apparently screening done on a neighbor's property, according to the staff report. But from what I'm seeing here, where does the winery sit in this hill? Is it going to be on the face facing the road? Is it on the backside? Or is there been, do we have any?
It's on the, if you were.
We don't have a simulation, I'm assuming.
The applicant?
We
does?
Do. Okay, let me wait until after the, okay. I'll withhold my question until after the applicant's presentation.
But while we're on the screen, just since you brought it up, see the arrow, the black arrow? That's where the winery will be. Behind the white building there is another winery. So it's going to be tucked back behind that winery.
So that's an existing winery we're looking at?
Existing winery.
Okay, and so the subject winery is going to be behind that.
So right. that hilltop is not on the subject property, or is?
The one in the foreground? The
foreground, yeah.
No.
Yeah, where the Manassi, that's a different knoll here. With this.
So the winery site is behind that
hill. Then it's valley and another knoll.
Okay, Commissioner Irving.
Karen, I'd like a little further clarification on this phrase used throughout of industry-wide events. I assumed that just meant the major wine festivals, but you implied in your comments that it also included winemaker dinners. Are there any limits on these events?
Yeah, typically they're non-advertised and under 50 people.
But in terms of any limits in terms of frequency
numbers
during the course of the year?
No.
But those are automatically permitted by the winery ordinance?
Yes. It's part of their allowed marketing of their of their wine.
Thank you.
Commissioner Topping, maybe I shut off your light accidentally, but please go ahead.
I was going to say that the plot plan, I don't think you've shown that yet. That actually shows the contours. to going back to the question that was raised by Commissioner Murphy.
Speaker, thank you.
There are contours on the site plan. I can grab the big set if you'd like to look at those.
Yeah, so my question is, does the layout fall in front of or behind the ridge or on top?
It's situated kind of on top and below the knoll, but looking from a visual perspective, when we're looking at skylighting, there's other knolls around it that is higher than this knoll. So
it won't silhouette on the blue sky behind.
There'll be one roof area where it would come out, where you could see a slight little roof, and then they've proposed landscaping in that area.
I suggest, as far as the visuals, that we hold further questions until we have an opportunity to view the applicant's presentation, which I understand is going to address that concern. So, okay. Well, I guess staff has completed your presentation, and so therefore we will open the meeting to public comment and invite the applicant to come and speak.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. My name is Jamie Kirk, and I am representing the Law family this morning. We do have a presentation to run through, so if we can, I know I'll be tight on time, so if we can start my time as soon as I start my presentation, that would be great. And I did want to thank welcome Chairperson O'Grady, and thank Commissioner Christensen for all her efforts last year.
Well, thank you very much. One thing I should have mentioned, there are speaker slips in the back of the room for everyone who wishes to speak during public comment. Kindly fill out a speaker slip and turn it into the commission.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, we're happy to be here, the first project of the year. We're here requesting approval of a conditional use permit for a new winery. The winery, as you know, is an agricultural use. It's located in an agricultural area on an agriculturally zoned parcel. The project is compliant with all standards in the land use ordinance, so we have staff recommendation of approval, and we're here to ask for your approval this morning. The Laws own 291 acres on both sides of Peachy Canyon. I've been working with the Laws for probably over 5 years looking at siting a winery. Whenever I first started working with them, they only owned the property on the north side of Peachy Canyon. We looked at options to locate a winery on that property. There was a shared access that went over a neighbor's property to access this property, the Lynn's property. And the Lynn's would prefer not to have tasting room traffic, production traffic on that shared access. So we looked at other areas in the county, in the North County, to locate a winery. As luck would have it, a property across the street became available where we had connectivity. And the property was purchased, and here we are today. This is a detail of the southern portion of the property showing the setbacks from the property line. Again, I'm fully compliant with the setback requirements. And this is an aerial that shows the distance of the winery to the nearest neighboring residences. We're over 1,000 feet to the Lynn residence with some topographical separation there, as well as 1,400 feet approximately to the Young's residence. The property is surrounded by neighboring agricultural uses and hospitality-related uses, again, agriculture being the primary use in the neighborhood. The winery is approximately 3,600 square feet. That includes indoor building area and outdoor area. The building area is approximately 27,000 square feet. Of that, 1,587 square feet is dedicated to the tasting room. This is really a production-based facility. They're really taking production seriously and looking at producing some quality wine. And we're not requesting special events. We are including an option for phased construction. And just the Laws intend to build it all at once, but we all know it's a uncertain economic time out there right now. So we've had several wineries time out on their time period, so we didn't want to have to come back and see you again. We'd like to have options on the timing. This slide shows the total area of the winery that's above ground. Because most of the winery is subterranean, we've got about 11,000 square feet that's actually above the ground. The winery is situated on the downslope off of the ridgeline. I think this gets to Commissioner Topping's questions. The slope is important because it facilitates the subterranean design in efforts to reduce energy needs through natural cooling and the winemaking process. Minimizes the building footprint and site disturbance and eliminates the visual impacts from Peachy Canyon. This is gives a slide of the slope as well as superimpose the elevation from the architect so you can see the building area, how it is on the opposite, on the downhill side of the ridge and terraced into that hillside. And then here's the opposite view. This is the east elevation. The building is terraced into the hillside, providing three levels of winemaking, starting with fermentation on the top elevation, or I'm sorry, receiving, and then fermentation, and then down to the bottom level for barrel storage. The tiered design allows efficient use of gravity for the wine production activity. It's known in the industry that gravity flow is a better means for moving your wine, and it also uses less energy. Here's a cross section and showing just again the tiered nature of the building. Scott Hawley is our winemaker. He's in the audience. He's assuring us that he is going to be making some premium wine. He has been involved in design of this building from day one. He has driven much of how this winery has been designed, even down to the size of the fermenters. They're designed to accommodate the individual vineyard blocks. And we're implementing a barrel stacking program of 2 to 3 barrels versus 4 and 5 barrels, which you might see in a typical winery. And that's why you're seeing the bigger square footage. I think you may be used to seeing a smaller square footage for a 10,000 case winery, but because we're implementing an alternative stacking program, the 2 barrels, as well as probably a longer aging program, we need that additional square footage. And the 2-barrel stacking program limits the forklift traffic and the movement of the wine, and it really results in a better wine. And it results in a reduction in water use because we're only washing the barrels once per vintage versus sometimes 4 times per vintage. So I think you're going to be seeing this more as our winemakers become much more sophisticated, trying to create higher and higher quality of wine. These are the wine techniques that are going to be implemented. We've been working with BAR Architecture out of San Francisco, and they've been great at implementing green building design options into the winery, or not options, but components. You can run through them. The multi-story design minimizes the footprint. We're doing the roof capture for rainwater. Again, we're going to have night cooling. We've implemented a zero-scape landscaping palette. And we've been working with Wallace Group on low-impact development, looking at ways to beneficially reuse the water and minimizing water demand and then providing facilities for recharge. We have done quite a bit of neighbor outreach. We did receive the letter at the end of the day yesterday from Mr. Ogden on behalf of the Lynns and the Youngs. And issues that were brought up were noise, traffic, kitchen, visual impacts, and lighting. Holly's touched on those. I did want to expand on the noise impacts as well as our mechanical area is enclosed. You can see it located here. It's on the second floor. It's enclosed. It's behind these walls. Our bottling area will be indoors. And so these are all more on the east elevation. The landscape berm, which we've implemented for visual impacts, also adds as a noise buffer, but also the prevailing winds go northwest, so it will be taking the noise away from the two, from their houses. I think Glenn touched on traffic. In the effort of time, I'm probably going to get to the visual impacts so we can get to those. And I did want to note, we have a note on our landscape lighting plan directly talking about the lighting. We have conditions. The visual impacts, whenever I started working with the laws, this is their property back here. Well, of course, where would they want to put it? Right out here on the ridge. We talked about the sensitivity of view sheds and visual impacts, and through that came back to locating the winery behind Manasseh Young exactly to minimize any impacts from the public view. And there were pictures provided in the letter from Ogden and Fricks, and most of those appear to be taken from adjacent private property views and not from the public roads. Our visual simulations, this is the existing view heading west on Peachy Canyon. This is existing. This is where the winery roof peaks over. This is the project without mitigation. See it right there? And then we've implemented a landscape berm with mature oak trees, and it disappears on with the implementation of that mitigation. When we're heading east, this is the one view on Peachy Canyon heading east where it would be visible. Again, looking here, and the next slide, you can see a little bit of the roof peek up right behind Manasseh Young. And then, again, with the landscaping, it disappears. We spent a lot of time being sensitive to the views from the public because we knew that that's an issue for the county as well as your commission. Conclusion, this winery, it's indicative of the surrounding neighborhood. It meets all the standards. We designed it to not require any exceptions or waivers. We wanted to have a fully compliant project. We're requesting your approval this morning, and we're available for questions. I would like to point out that we have a number of experts, they're project team members in the audience. So if you have a question about architecture, Jeff Goodwin from BAR is present. If you have a question about the engineering civil work, Rob Miller, we've been working with him from Wallace Group, he is present. Scott Hawley, our extraordinaire winemaker, is in the audience. And John Crossland, our vineyard manager, Don and Susie Law, the owners, and we have representatives from Specialty Construction who will be the contractor. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Kirk. I imagine commissioners may have some questions, although I don't see anyone's light on. But okay. Commissioner Irving.
Thank you. Ms. Kirk, on your visual simulations, do you show the rooftop terrace is on the Peachy Canyon side of that ridge. Is that correct? From I read the description?
No, that's not correct. There's
then... I have a question then of what exactly... there is comments about a rooftop terrace.
Right.
So that it would be on the south side of the ridge and not visible at all from Peachy Canyon Road.
Correct.
But visible from... the Manasseh and Young property.
It will be visible from other private properties.
Okay.
Correct.
I thought I saw in the plans here it says cave terrace that running through the hill. Does that not extend through to the north side of the hill?
That is the cave portal is what.
Okay,
we call
so
it.
It's just a portal. It's not something that can be used for any kind of public assembly.
No, it's a cave portal, so it's an opening. So it's a component where you walk through the cave room. There will be an opening at the end of it,
mm-hmm.
and you'll see light through it. But that's the only component that's on that goes over onto the Peachy Canyon side of the ridge.
Okay, I guess going. This may be a question of the back and forth between you or Karen. The question of industry events that I had earlier, do those events allow automatically amplified music?
Typically they do. It's an open house. It's kind of, and Cammie can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's basically the wineries can have open houses. They can have a number of people, food, and amplified music.
So
it's four times a year, four weekends a year.
But you said winemaker dinners, there are no limits. So winemaker dinners can have amplified music. Is that correct?
They can only have amplified music limited by what the ordinance would allow for the level of noise. So typically we don't see that. Typically winemaker dinners are held inside
Addressing the concerns brought by Mr. Ogden's letter of noise and sensitive receptors, and we do have a number of houses around in the area, a winemaker dinner having amplified music would be subject to the county's noise ordinance. It wouldn't
correct.
Be exempt in any
oh,
way.
Oh, yeah, no. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Can I just follow
sure.
up on that? What about the time? Isn't there something in the winery ordinance talks about the time limits that where these events can occur, or is it that the tasting room is open? I thought I remember reading something in there about time limits, which might help mitigate amplified noise from amplified music.
Well, the time limits as set forth in the ordinance are from 10 a.m. To 5 p.m.
That's for amplified music.
Associated with special events.
Special events, not industry-wide. So you refer...
You have to go back to the noise ordinance.
Right, and as we... Coach provide advice to our clients that are doing industry-wide events, and whenever we don't have those specific noise provisions that apply, we do advise them of the noise ordinance requirements. And the noise ordinance section of the land use ordinance has different levels of noise that are acceptable depending on the time of day. Mm-hmm. So I think it's after 10 p.m. it notches down significantly. And if it's something that's happening routinely, because I would say mostly our experience has been with the winemaker dinners, the under 50. The neighbors don't even know they're going on. They're pretty benign. But if we do have an issue where we've got a sensitive neighborhood, we advise our clients to go out and get handheld noise decibel meters and monitor it so they can make sure they're in compliance. Because depending on which way the wind is blowing, the noise impacts can be different.
Thank you. Thanks for that discussion on that. A couple of questions, just in general, how does the size of this tasting room and kitchen compare with other wineries such as Calcareous? Is it average, large?
It's the size of this tasting room is generally, especially in relation to the size of our production square footage, this is a very small tasting room. And it's 1,500 square feet. Whenever you're looking at secondary and incidental, and we're talking about 25,000 square feet of processing, we could probably request upwards of a 8,000 square foot tasting room, and it'd be okay because it's secondary and incidental. Again, this tasting room is very small. Whenever you look at the production, it's production based. But obviously, we need the tasting room to market and sell the wine.
Thank you for that. One of the last questions I have has to do with the traffic. As you know, Peachy Canyon is not exactly an easy road to drive, and the traffic trips projected in the staff report, or rather in the negative deck, it talks about 20 to 30 weekend trips per day. But that's the only conversation about traffic trips, that's referring to visitors, not to employees, or maybe this is a question more for staff or you. Or?
And I breezed through that slide because I was trying to get to the visual impact.
Maybe you could revisit the transportation slide.
I mean, what we're looking at during non-peak, and we're giving averages because sometimes we're going to be busier than other times.
Sure.
And non-peak, assume 2 to 4 employees are going to be a couple. Somebody in the tasting room. Scott's going to be there. Scott's already there because he's over at the vineyard watching the grapes grow. And so we've got, we're saying 4 employees. So a weekday, you're going to get a limited amount of tasting room traffic. So I think we put in estimating, again, these are average, 15 trips a day during the week and then an additional 30 or so on the weekends. Some weekends will be busier, but some weekends won't be as busy. But we also are expecting, as being a wine taster, and they're going to be visiting other wineries in the area, so it won't be just one added trip. It's going to be trips that are already out there.
Okay.
Okay. Commissioner Toppy.
Yeah, I just want to know which is the actual site plan.
Microphone, please.
Yeah.
Which is the actual site plan? We have 2 site plans. One's overall site plan, which shows more than just the development area. It shows apparently water retention and so forth and vineyards. And then the other one says site plan. And if either Ms. Kirk or staff could tell me which is which.
I think we had a variety of sheets in our plan set. So
yes, on page 117 shows an overview of the whole site, the access road, the house located on the property, the winery. And then we also have another site plan that gives a different look with the topo there. They're both in the proof set of plans. I will look at all of them when they're submitted with the construction plans and make sure that they're in compliance.
And I think the difference of what you're seeing is one is a site plan, one's the civil plan. We also have a landscape plan. So we've got a variety of sheets that are within that plan set.
Thanks.
Okay, Ms. Kirk, I just wanted to say I was happy to see all of the green aspects for the design of this winery, and we'll be taking your presentation into the record. So this is not a wish list, I take it. This is going to happen.
Yes, this is going to happen.
Okay,
right.
Great.
Right. And that's why I clarified when I said options. No, I meant components.
Okay.
And I would, you know, invite you to bring... They asked the architect to come up. They'd love to probably run through that if you have time.
Well, I'm aware that other wineries are involved in sustainability programs and sort of as an add-on, but I'm glad to see this one is starting out this way.
And we're seeing it as a trend.
Okay.
You know, it's great.
Okay, thank you very much. I have six speaker slips from the public. The first speaker slip is from Rick Quinn. Please come to the podium.
Mr. Chair, as Mr. Quinn is coming to the podium, I just wanted to let Commissioner Irving know that our daytime, nighttime noise levels, the daytime is from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., and nighttime is from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m., and the decibel level does go down significantly after 10 p.m.
Okay. On deck would be Mr. Rudy, I think it's Bachman. Please come to the other podium. Please begin, Mr. Quinn. Please, everyone, state your name and place of residence, and you have 3 minutes at the podium.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
My name is Rick Quinn, and my residence is shared between Camarillo, California, and 7110 Vineyard Drive in the Adelaide. I'm also the owner of Opolo Vineyards. I have been in the area since 1995. We farm 70 acres on the west side, have an additional 30 acres that is being planted also. And I'm here today to support the project for the laws. I've been in the winery business since 1999 and have seen the vitality of the North San Luis Obispo County grow. And there's lots of us who have done the same approach that the laws have done in their approach to mitigating any problems that you would have with neighborhoods and increasing the value of the products, the agricultural products that we produce and market to the public. Watching the project that Jamie's done and all the extra cost that goes into making sure that that fits into the scope of what you're trying to accomplish in North County and maybe through the winery industry, I think we're leading the industry on a nationwide basis and for sure locally. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Quinn, Mr. Rudy Bachman. And on deck is Scott Welcher, I believe.
Mr. Chair, if I may, this is Whitney McDonald, County Council. I just wanted to clarify for the public commenters that you're not required to state where you live for the record. We just like to have your name so that we know who's speaking. So I just wanted to clarify.
Thank you for doing that, Ms. McDonald.
Good morning, Commissioners. Chairman O'Grady, my name is Rudy Bachman. I do reside at 6530 Edna Road in San Luis Obispo.
Thank you for your support, Mr. Bachman.
I'm the president of Specialty Construction. We were introduced as one of the team members here, and we just want to thank you for the opportunity to review this very important and meaningful project. We're thrilled to be here and support the project. Their investment in the community speaks especially to us. They had the opportunity to go out of town and select some larger contractors. They made the commitment early on locally to choose a local firm, and that's why we're here today. With that, I want to speak real briefly about some of the economic impacts. We all read the news, talk to our neighbors, and we know the condition of the construction industry over the last several years. This project will provide approximately a minimum of about 125,000 man-hours of work. The majority of these will be highly skilled, head of household positions, and with this, they'll be providing approximately 15 to 20 head of household positions during the duration of the construction. In addition, there's many other indirect and direct benefits. Be a tremendous amount of materials and services purchased locally. Along with that, there's a tremendous amount and a significant amount of sales tax that's paid with that. The direct purchase income resulting from all the workers, you know, obviously will have a great ripple effect through our community here. Again, this project will provide so many real benefits to our local construction community, especially in a time like this where we really need it. This is a great project that fits well within our community, and we're grateful to the Law family for designing a meaningful project and hiring locally to construct their new family winery. We appreciate the opportunity to speak in front of you today, and we ask for your support for all of us by supporting the project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Buck. Next up, Scott Welcher, and on deck, Robert Nadeau.
Good morning, Commissioners, and Happy New Year. Scott Welcher, Templeton, California. Just speaking in favor of the project today, I think it meets the rural character of North County, and as the previous speaker mentioned, the economic vitality of head of household positions are certainly very important. I've been a resident of this county for 30 years, 25 in the North County, and all those years involved in the wine business, so certainly my family has been raised with the benefit of the wine industry. I think the project fits the rural character of North County, the small amount of case goods production, the green effects that have been taken into account, and no events. I encourage the board to adopt this project. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Welcher. Mr. Nadeau, and on deck, Roy Ogden.
Good morning. I'm Robert Nadeau. I will state my address at 3860 Peachy Canyon Road, which is sandwiched exactly between the two parcels. I'm a fence line neighbor to the west of the Law's vineyard property, and I'm an across the street neighbor to the north of the proposed winery property. And having been in the wine industry producing wine since 1987 for other people and since 1997 on our own, where our little winery is across the street from their proposed winery, I've seen a lot of wineries all over the state, and looking at the plans that the Laws brought over and walked me through, I thought it was a stunning project. I liked how it took the topography, the geography, I mean, everything that would be a concern that people maybe didn't take into consideration a short while back. I thought that this project was very well, it took everything into account, I thought. I had a few questions. They were very forthright with answering my concerns, and I think the project is very benign and if anything, would be a benefit to our area, our neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nadeau. Roy Ogden, and on deck is John Crossland.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chairman, honorable
Welcome.
Commissioners. My name is Roy Ogden. Let me point out, we are not opposing the project. We understand there will be a winery there, and we are not here to bash the project because we're going to be neighbors with the Laws and the winery for a long time. And I say we, I mean my clients, who are neighbors. I'll go quickly. The reason why we wrote the letter is because now is the time to set the conditions that will be enforceable. Now is the time when you have the opportunity and the luxury of considering this project and making sure you have enforceable conditions, not after the project's built. Because then when we want changes, then it costs the applicant and the landowner, the Laws, way too much money to make changes then, and then it becomes a fight over what the condition means. So when we looked at the project, we too had respect for many of the things that the Laws were trying to do, but we have concerns, and my clients do, and I'm concerned as well for them, that certain things have not been addressed, and those are really their primary concerns. We didn't simply give you a laundry list of every little problem we could find. We focused on the ones that we actually have a concern about, and now is the time to do something about them. But what I heard today in response to, for example, the noise concerns was that, well, we don't have to study that, so no study was made. And I think it falls short to say, well, there's a noise ordinance, and in the future, if there's a problem, then we can worry about it then. I mean, let's take care of it now. I've seen smaller projects with noise studies. It's not a Herculean undertaking to have a noise study. I think everyone recognizes, especially in the North County, that with unimproved property, noise carries like it carries over water. And again, we're not here to stop the project. We want them to have their project, but we want it to be smart, and we want it to be with conditions that make sense for everybody, including the neighborhood. And, you know, we as the neighbors, my clients, have a different view of the project than its owners. And that's why this process works, because we come and say, well, what about this? Well, noise hasn't been studied. Traffic either. Maybe that was a typo in the environmental report document that said 15 trips per week. Maybe it meant to say 15 trips a day per week. I don't know. I just know what I read. But again, there's been no traffic study. And why not? Obviously, traffic's going to be added. We're not trying to stop the project. We're just saying, why not study it? Because this is another primary concern we have. And then finally, as to the visual impacts, you know, it's nice to say we're going to have shielding and all that, but is there really a condition that says this project will not be seen from the public road? I didn't see that condition in there. And I just don't know why it wasn't in there. And in the light noise as well, yes, you have to have your light shielded down, but is there really a condition in there that says you can't see light from the road? I didn't see it in there, and those are the types of conditions we're looking for. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome. Next up, John Crossland, and that's the last of the speaker slips I have.
My name is John Crossland. I live on my vineyard northeast of Paso Robles. I own a vineyard management business called Vineyard Professional Services. For the last 15 years, I've developed vineyards for a number of clients in the North County of San Luis Obispo. And I've had the great opportunity to work with some on some great projects. We designed and developed the vineyards, as an example, for the dinner winery. Processing the fruit on-site, we're not having these trucks loaded with grapes going down Peachy Canyon Road for any length in order to get to other sites in the county or perhaps even out of the county to process. So there's an energy savings there. There's a traffic savings. And having been a vineyard manager for 40 years in different areas in the state, this is one of the most low-impact projects that I've had the opportunity to work with and see being envisioned. And I really think this is a good project. I think it's a little bit ironic that some of the complainants, or at least one of the complainants, has a very long grandfathered in winery that sits at the top of a ridge and is a lighthouse beacon on Peachy Canyon. But please approve this project.
Thank you, Mr. Crossland. Before I close public comment, I want to thank everyone who participated in the public comment process for your cogent and beneficial comments. I would like to extend to the applicant the opportunity, in case those public comments brought up anything that you would like to address.
Good morning again. Jamie Kirk, representing the Law family. I would like to thank everybody that did come to speak today. We appreciate the public input through this public process. In regards to some of the comments brought up by Mr. Ogden, I mean, we've been through the planning process. This project has been looked at by all of the departments, Public Works, because we work with Public Works on all of our projects. They don't dismiss a project. They take a hard look at a project, and I trust that Mr. Marshall has looked at the traffic impacts and has determined that there wouldn't be a significant impact. If not, I know that I would have conditions or be doing traffic studies because I've had to do that in the past. I think regard to traffic, based on the limited amount of production, we have a small tasting room. We're not requesting an event program. We're really looking at a benign traffic or a benign impact whenever it comes to traffic. Also, in regards to noise, I want Mr. Ogden, as well as the Lynns and the Youngs, to know that we didn't ignore the noise of the mechanical equipment or, you know, the facilities associated with the winery. It was part of the design to make sure that they were located in areas that would have the least impact on neighboring and noise-sensitive uses as possible. And I'd like to extend invitation to invite any of us up to speak if you have questions.
Okay. I don't see any commissioner questions at this time, so I'll close public comment and bring it back to the commission for deliberation. But I think perhaps before we start that deliberation, we might recess and take a 15-minute break and then come back and do the deliberations and make a decision. So, it's about 10 after, so, 15 minutes. What would that be, 10:25, something like that? We will reconvene. Thank you.
Whoa.
I reconvene our Planning Commission meeting. When we last recessed, we were about to begin commission deliberations on this item, and the commissioner from the district, in this case, Commissioner Irving from District 1, has the privilege of speaking first.
Thank you, Chair. For the applicant or Ms. Kirk, I would and staff as well. The question of skylining or the visibility of the property, I believe I heard in one of the presentations there would be landscaping that would be planted to obscure the view from Peachy Canyon Road. Could I see that visualization again? Is that a condition, Holly? That the appropriate landscaping be placed so that the building is not.
Karen, no, it's part of their approved landscape plan.
It is. So. It is in the landscaping plan adequately.
Yes.
Okay. I don't know if you can bring up or perhaps bring up the applicant's simulation of that, but I'd like a little further clarity on what part of the building is visible from Peachy Canyon.
While they're looking for a slide, I thought I might just give you an idea of what staff goes through when we look at visual for a project.
Thank you.
We look for the reasonable view from the public road. So it's you as a driver or a passenger. It's in your reasonable cone of vision. So if you have to turn your head, while you're driving, that's not a reasonable
view. Or if the only place you can see it is when you're making a sharp turn.
Exactly.
And you look to your right. And
right.
Yeah, okay.
So. Great. And in this, and we also look at the neighborhood. We look at, is there any development on the tops of knolls? And in this particular neighborhood, there's quite a few.
Mm-hmm.
There's a
here's the
little building sticking up.
Here's
the simulation.
Here's
the existing. We have these from both, because it's really these two viewpoints from Peachy Canyon. We've driven up and down Peachy Canyon going, where can we see it, where can we see it, where can we see it? And we've got these two locations, because mostly on the other parts of Peachy Canyon, you're shrouded by tree canopy or you have some other topography that's screening it. So we chose these two locations. These are the most visible locations. I went the wrong way. With the project without the landscape plan, and then you can see that berm with the mitigation trees. And then whenever we're looking at the view from the east, heading east on Peachy Canyon, again, this is existing, no project. Here is project. What you're seeing peak up here is really a chimney, the chimney, and just a little peak of the roof line from the one-story tasting room. And then we've incorporated some landscaping along this western end to, again, mitigate that view.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify that for my own understanding. I know that corner and all the trees that are to the left of your red arrow there, are they on subject property or they're on a further ridge further back?
You see? These trees right here?
No, if you go up to your arrow.
Okay.
Up here. And then go to the left, Holly, or if you're running that.
Over here?
Yeah, those right there.
That's on subject property.
Okay. So that, but those are?
That's existing. That's the existing house that's up there.
Ah, thank
right.
you.
Where we, thank, whenever we drove
thank
up.
You. The road that goes up.
Whenever we drove up
okay,
and we
right.
parked, we
yes.
parked here and then hiked
okay.
quite a ways down
right.
here.
Thank you. Thank you. That's
thank you.
All for you, Ms. Kirk. I think you answered my question about winery ordinance allowed uses. But the question of noise and the question of lighting, Lighting, Holly indicated that would be inspected after the fact, and if it wasn't per ordinance requirements or per your conditions of approval, it would be enforced and things would be changed. Do you correct?
Yes.
So the questions of noise, though, special events, the typical special events, which are the Zen Fest and Wine Fest, et cetera, the noise limitation doesn't kick in until 10 p.m. When we were discussing the now tabled special events ordinance, that was a shorter period of time, as I recall, like 9 o'clock or something. It doesn't apply to the wineries exactly, but I guess the question I really had to do was, as people are having winemaker dinners and things of that sort, if noise becomes an issue for the neighborhood, what is the mechanism by which that can be corrected, or is it not correctable because it is permitted under the ordinance?
It becomes a neighbor situation. Code enforcement can be involved if they exceed the noise ordinance, period.
And Cammie, on that, the decibel level is the same as what we've seen in other projects, 65 dB?
I believe it's 70 dB during the day, and then I think it drops to...
Well, 70 dB for 7 to 10 p.m.
Right.
And then it drops to 65.
65.
Which is the same as the winery ordinance allows,
right,
for
mm-hmm.
amplified music.
Mm-hmm.
I believe when the board made the decision to allow the special event or the industry-wide events, it was that four times a year there may be noise associated with winery events, and it's expected, it's to be anticipated.
And it's coming from all of the wineries in the area, so it
right.
treats everybody equitably.
Sure.
Right.
And, you know, we did look at the sensitive noise receptors in the area. The closest noise receptor is a house that's adjacent to an existing winery. The house that's located across from Peachy Canyon is more than 1,000 feet away, and also has Peachy Canyon in between it and the proposal. So in our determination, there really wasn't an issue with noise.
Great. Thank you. And then finally, just do you want to, Holly or Karen, address any of the comments about the traffic trips per week, per day, a question that Mr. Ogden's letter brought up in terms of...
I think the wine industry does a good job at carpooling, designated driving, use of limousines, use of, as Holly mentioned, a number of shuttle services that are available. So we believe that the industry is doing that now, and don't believe we need to condition this kind of a project, this small of a tasting room. So that's
okay. Thank you. Glenn, do you have anything to add?
I'll just chime in on Mr. Ogden's question. That was why a traffic report wasn't required or requested by Public Works. And I think it's been brought up, and I'll just reaffirm what I had said. Public Works does not have any concerns on the operational characteristics of Peachy Canyon or any of the roads or intersections under its control as a result of the trips proposed to be generated by this project. If, in fact, it is underestimated here, even applying the Institute of Transportation Engineers, I'm still looking at 70 to 100 average daily trips for this project. Still no impacts to our facilities.
Okay.
There was no reason to require a traffic report.
Thank you. That's all.
Thanks,
my question.
Mr. Erring. Commissioner Toppe.
Yeah, I just wanted to get a picture of what the capacity is for the four times a year wine event. How many people would you have there? I don't think that question's been asked.
And that would be up to the individual winery. And usually it's...
I mean, in this case, how many are you likely to have at capacity?
I would ask the client to...
Okay.
It's based on your site and what you're...
Jamie Kirk, representing the laws. I would say at this time it's premature to even start to put numbers on how many people we would have for an industry-wide event. But in working with other winery clients, we know that we can only have as many customers, clients, as we can park on the site, because we can't park on the public roadways. So I think especially, parking's going to be a limiting factor.
And how many cars and or people are you going to have at one
time? I mean, right now we have, I believe, 23 parking spaces. There's probably some overflow area where we could park down on the bottom. That would just be temporary parking for events. But I don't want to get into it. And I can say this isn't going to be a 400-person event location with this winery. I mean, we're really looking at the smaller end, but we can't give you a number at this time because every event activity is going to be different during those event weekends. They might market one more so than another, so they might try to get all their wine club members, say, out at the Zin Fest and then really not talk about harvest much.
So if you just went by square footage, what's the room capacity?
I will ask that the architect come in and see if he has an answer to that question, because I don't know that we went through actual capacity within the production facility for guests. We looked at capacity in the production facility for wine.
While the architect's approaching, typically these industry-wide events, the individual wineries that participate, there's just people in and out of the wineries all day. It's just a heightened awareness of the wine industry for that area, whether it's Edna or North County. So it's not, typically it's not, hey, during the industry-wide event, we're going to have 600 people come to the winery for a something. There are times when that happens, when a winery will say, we're going to have X happening between this hour and this hour, but it's more of the open house kind of feeling when you have people going in and out and in and out. At least that's our understanding.
Well, during industry-wide events, don't they use a lot of shuttles and additional transportation just for those weekends? I know Jim might know. I think typically from what I read, they do put more shuttles in place and try and keep the traffic under control during the industry-wide events.
Commissioner Irving?
Commission's ready.
I'd like to move that we adopt the negative declaration in
court. Excuse me. I did have a few questions.
I still had a question to get answered.
To go.
Well, Commissioner Topping, did you have some?
Somebody was going to answer the question about how many people
would
fit into the room.
What happened to that?
At maximum capacity. Yeah, what happened to that?
I was willing to let you vote. Jeff Goodwin, VAR Architects. Our office is in San Francisco. In regards to the capacity for the tasting room, it's roughly 1,200 square feet. If you use an occupant load of 20 square feet per person, that's about 60 people. But, we have designed it in a way that there are outdoor terraces or other areas where people could congregate. So, again, I wouldn't say that an event would be limited by the size of the tasting room.
From planning staff, is that any? Oh, yes, Ms.
From me. It could be from someone else. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Whitney McDonald from the County Council's office. I just wanted to clarify one thing for the record on the traffic issue. And I believe that perhaps Mr. Marshall can confirm that we just wanted to make sure that even if the additional traffic numbers that are suggested in Mr. Ogden's letter were used for this project, I believe Mr. Marshall's conclusion is that it would not create any significant impacts for the project that needed to be mitigated in any way.
And that is correct.
That was my understanding.
Okay.
Thank you.
I wanted to clarify.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Chair, if I may just add on there, I believe in the Oros report when he did an analysis on the driveway site distance, I think he recommended at least one small oak be removed there as well. I'll just throw that out at you. But it sounds like the mitigation is covered for on site.
Okay. Ms. Phipps, does that conflict at all with the one oak, with any of the conditions?
We have mitigation for 2-to-1 replacement, but I understood that that oak tree was going to be saved and the one up top was going to be impacted.
Okay.
We still have oak tree mitigation.
All right. Commissioner Murphy, did you have something else?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, and I think it was Mrs. Null's comment about ag processing noise is exempt from noise ordinance. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, would that extend to a winery facility and a wine tasting room that's an accessory to the ag processing, do you believe, or no?
Well, a tasting room is an accessory use to ag processing, and a winery is ag processing. It's kind of a stretch, but...
That's the way it is.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Most of my questions have been answered, but I'd just like to... go through my notes here. On page 1-3, Ms. Phipps, you state that the height the allowable height is 35 feet and the proposed is 34, but the question is above what? This is a terraced building into a hillside, part of which protrudes above the hill, so the elevation changes drastically. So I'm wondering what the ordinance has to say about what the allowable height is when you have a variable grade situation such as this.
Still average it's still average natural grade.
And so that's what these numbers represent,
mm-hmm.
Height above.
As shown in their plans also.
Got it. Okay. Thank you, by the way, Ms. Phipps, for incorporating some of those conditions that we discussed the other day. Some of the duplicate conditions, clean those up. Just a note about the septic system and environmental review often referred to poor soils and problematic for septic. Could you just state for the record briefly how you've addressed or how it's proposed that this project address these problematic soils?
I took the project specifics down to our specialist, Barry Toll, and showed him the project specifics, and he didn't see that this project would present any significant impacts for them to have a septic system.
So despite what's written in the negative deck, it can be dealt with
yes.
Some sort of engineering
approach.
I should
have deleted a few more stock conditions in there that
okay.
are more applicable.
All right.
Or stock wording, sorry.
I understand. The county has been instrumental in implementing or in the process of implementing reporting program where with wine industry participation in reporting water consumption in an effort to gather reliable information in our county about water usage. I know this isn't the Paso Basin, so we're not in a level of severity 3 situation here. Nevertheless, I wonder if you had the opportunity to speak perhaps with Mr. Caruso or anyone else about including as a condition a requirement to participate in the county program via the wine industry organization where the information is confidentially presented to the county.
Yes, I did right after that go talk to Mr. Caruso, and he said he's reneging on what he originally said, where he wanted everybody to give all their correct.
Okay, thank you.
Before, last sentence.
Okay, thought I saw it, but didn't remember. Okay, well, those are all of my questions, and thank you, staff, for responding so comprehensively to that. And... unless there's further discussion. Oh, yes, there is. Mr. Topping.
I read the condition about special events, and it says to be clear, this approval does not authorize special events, and that means what it means. But then special events could happen through advertising later on. Is that a possibility?
Not advertising. No.
So they would have to come back to your
Is it prohibited?
Yes.
by this language?
On special events, yes. It, which is over and above the industry-wide event.
No. Okay.
Is weddings.
So if they would...
So weddings, for example...
Right.
...are prohibited by this language?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So that would prohibit them from coming back under the events ordinance and trying to...
No, wouldn't prohibit them to come back. They can always have the opportunity to come back to your body and request, and you would look at...
Which would eliminate that.
Oh, well, that was my question.
It just requires them to get a separate permit.
Separate process.
This permit does not grant that privilege. Okay. They have to come back, but it doesn't prohibit it as long as they have an event permit.
But people would have a say.
Yes.
Yes. Right.
And one other, just because it's in this report, I'd like to get clarification, not necessarily now, but down the road on chip seal. Because I've asked about this before, and I'm still not clear on chip seal, what we're talking about. And I looked it up just on the internet to see what chip seal is, and it's not what we're talking about here. So I'd, just for future purposes, I'd like to get that defined clearly, at least in my mind, what chip seal is.
Mr. Marshall,
now.
I know it's high-quality chip seal, but...
Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. I think why the APCD uses chip seal, I'm not certain, but chip seal, in my eyes, is just a combination of oil and aggregate, and you just pour it down. It doesn't really have any structural stability or strength to it, but it does work for dust control.
So that's what we're meaning, because... Traditionally, it's actually a resurfacing of an existing asphalt.
That's what we use it for. We don't use it to build roads.
But you're just talking about actually literally going out and putting some oil down and some gravel.
Some oil and
creating
gravel.
A surface.
Okay.
Okay. I would entertain a motion.
Yeah. Can I? Now?
You may,
okay.
Sir.
I move that we adopt the negative declaration in accordance with the applicable provisions of California Environmental Quality Act. And approve the conditional use permit DRC 2010-00071 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B as amended today.
Second. Thank you very much. And a second from Commissioner Christian.
I just wanted to say I didn't have a lot of questions because I thought the staff report and the application were excellent, and I think it's a great project. I've seen a lot of wineries. Seen a lot more of these applications than some of the other commissioners, and this was really a great one to read, and I'm thrilled to be able to vote for it.
Before I call for the roll vote, any other commissioner have any discussion that they would like to add to the record? I would only like to say, as a retired consulting engineer, having worked on literally hundreds of projects, I can tell a quality project from one that's just trying to skate under with minimum standards, my perception is this is certainly the former, and I'm going to support this project. I do appreciate, however, Mr. Ogden's concern about conditions and studies. I do find, however, that I think the conditions are more than adequate, together with my perception of the quality that's going to go into this this project, and I do not feel that the studies would result in any different outcome, because I don't perceive that this winery is substantially different from any of the others in the area. In fact, it seems like it's starting out at a better place. So respectfully, I just wanted you to know how I came to my conclusion. So all right, no other discussion. Ramona, please call the roll.
Commissioner Irving.
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen.
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy.
Yes.
Commissioner Topping.
Yes.
Chairperson O'Grady.
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Congratulations to the applicant, the law family. Okay. That brings us to hearing item number 2. Ramona, would you kindly introduce that item?
Hearing to consider a request by Siempre Adelante, LLC, for a conditional use permit and variance. County file number DRC 2010-00066, Supervisorial District 1, Karen Nall, Project Manager.
Okay, before I ask Ms. Nall to proceed with the staff report, is there any
clearest, but I wanted to show you that this area has... it's really a mix of
Ms. Nall, could you pause momentarily until To folks coming into the hearing room right now, the hearing is in session. Thank you for holding it down since the hearing is in session so that we can hear the presentation from our staff. Well, I think there's folks out in the hall that didn't get the message, so I think we're just going to wait a little while here. Kindly shut the door in the back of the room. Someone who's seated in the back of the room, kindly, thank you very much. Please shut those doors. Thanks. Thanks, Jamie. You know, Ms. Nall, I think what I should do right now is just welcome everyone who just came into the hearing and then let you know that there will be a time after the staff presentation for public comment, and it is a requirement for anyone wishing to come up and speak at the podium to fill out a speaker slip. Now, these slips are located in the back of the room, so and please turn them into the commission at either end. That would be fine. I just thought it'd be good to announce that now rather than have a lot of disruption later, but it looks like there's been a lot of the slips already filled out, so thank you for that, Ms. Phipps. I'm sorry, Ms. Nall, I'm still on the last
one. Again, Karen Nall with the planning staff. Again, it's an RV park located at the intersection of Walsona Road and Highway 101, south of San Miguel, north of the city of Paso Robles. This slide shows the land use category maps in this general area. I just wanted to show you that it's quite a mix. The purple is commercial service. The tan or beige is residential suburban. The gray here is industrial. This lighter green is residential rural. The darker green is agriculture. And this is a land use category map of the site and the immediate surrounding area. Again, the site is, this is Walsona to the south, 101 along the western side. The site is commercial service, and then there's a portion of the site that's zoned residential suburban. Aerial of the site, the existing building was formerly a doll museum and a restaurant. It's known in the community as the Moe Family Doll Museum. Another area of the site that's more accurate, I wanted to show you the storage facility that's built behind to the east of the existing or the proposed site. Here's a photo of the site, the former doll museum, which is proposed to be converted to a clubhouse. This existing sign will be relocated, and we've conditioned that it be lowered. And just here's a view of the site looking across 101, and a view of the site looking north towards 101. Again, the project is a 130-unit RV park, includes clubhouse, office, market, restroom, additional restroom, a couple swimming pools, playgrounds, and barbecue area. The approval before you today also includes two freestanding signs and a detailed landscaping screening plan. Site plan, just wanted to walk through it again. Here's the former doll museum, which will be converted to the clubhouse. The access will be off Walsona here. This exit here is just for emergency purposes only, so traffic will not come out there. It's only a secondary access for emergencies. I think there's a rumor in the neighborhood that there was some internal road going out to Monterey Road, which is not correct. The only access is from Walsona Road. I added this grading plan to show the entire site. Just wanted to make sure you were aware of the drainage basins, which are located
on the northern portion of the entire site. So this is in the residential category. This drainage, we could talk about this more if there's questions come up. I believe you have the larger landscape plan, but the project is designed with a metal fence, high-quality metal fence, with very detailed landscaping. Instead of doing a block wall type of a system, we're looking at more of a green fence, which we believe will be more attractive than a block wall. Visual stimulation, thank you.
It happens to everybody.
I believe the agent has this in color, which will probably make it a little better. Then quickly, I want to walk through what has been kind of an interesting challenge is what our jurisdiction is versus what the state jurisdiction is. State Code 25 preempts the county. We are very limited in what we can look at for RV parks, and we're limited to the perimeter walls and reasonable landscaping only along the road frontages, signs, access, and parking. The state will be the permitting authority and will be the operation and the enforcement authority for this park. However, just to appease that we have no authority, there's a lot of other jurisdictions that go into the approval process of an RV park. Public Works is the authority for drainage, so they'll be issuing a drainage permit, basically. For the operation, Glenn can talk about that if there's any questions come up. Tim Tomlinson is also here, who's an expert in drainage. And Public Works will also be assisting with access. County Fire, they still go through the regular county fire fire plan process. Public Health, I thought was interesting. They'll be regulating the swimming pools. And possibly the market. If the market is considered a retail food establishment, then the health department may get involved with that facility. Caltrans will be involved in the highway improvements that are conditioned as part of this project. And then we have the waste discharge permit. Because the project exceeds 2,500 gallons of waste per day, the permit is the state authority on the state takes over the authority for waste discharge, so that will be through the regional board. This applicant has gone to the regional board and has been granted a waste discharge permit. It was granted about a month ago, and the applicant can speak to that. Also, we have Kit Fox mitigation that is required, and we work with Fish and Game for that. Then I wanted to go through the variances, which there were some questions about what variances were needed. It was a little tricky because it was, what are we limited to? Our authority is limited to reasonable landscaping and fencing in the public right-of-way. So there are actually two variances that are required. One is the planning area standard for the Wellsona Commercial Service Area requires a 40-foot front landscaping screening. We're considering the front to be Wellsona Road, and the planning area standard requires a 20-foot side landscaping buffer or landscaping setback. That would be the Highway 101 side. We believe we have the authority for both those sides. The applicant meets the 40-foot on the front for the Wellsona, however, is requesting a reduction of the 20-foot to 10-foot. And we believe we can make the findings to reduce that setback. The landscape screening is very detailed, lots of trees. We think the 10 feet is sufficient. The second request is for a landscape berm. The planning area standard requires a landscape berm in the front setback. The applicant had not planned to put that berm in. As staff, we don't believe the berm will really do much additional screening. We think we can make the findings. Also, a couple other points I wanted to make. In this 40-foot buffer from Wellsona Road, the applicant has proposed some vegetative swales, which is opposite of berms. And so I do believe the applicant could put in a berm. However, they haven't designed it at this time, and it will affect drainage in the LID. So again, the variance findings, this is a very different use than your typical commercial service use, which I believe is what the reason behind the planning area standards, when they were written, they were. However, an applicant can request additional square footage with the CUP. The ordinance allows one freestanding sign per 300 feet of frontage. Again, the land use ordinance allows you to locate the freestanding sign in the setbacks with CUP approval. There's a planning area standard for Wellsona that limits freestanding signs to 12 feet high. So you have two, you have the ordinance and the planning area standards affecting signs for this project. Again, the applicant is proposing two signs, both located in the setback. One sign is 20 feet tall. The total is 124 square feet. Staff is recommending approval of the 120 square feet. We support the use or them putting the signs in the setback, and we've conditioned the project to reduce the one sign down to 12 feet. So the ordinance says you just need conditional use permit approval, but there's no waivers or findings needed. So that may confuse folks looking for a finding. It's not required. Then I'll quickly touch on the Paso Robles groundwater basin. This is the test case. This is the first folks in. It was quite a fun exercise to do the water analysis. The interim guidelines and the discussion in the negative declaration and in the staff report were the interim guidelines that the Board of Supervisors directed staff to do. So I just wanted to make that clear. Our conclusion was that this project net demand is less than the historic use, so no offsets would be required for this project. And I'm sure there will be questions on that, and I'm available for that. So with that, staff's recommending adoption of the negative declaration, approval of the conditional use permit, and the two variances based on the findings and conditions.
Well, thank you very much, Ms. Nall. I would entertain limited commissioner questions at this time, if there are any. I don't see any speaker lights on. So, Commissioner Christensen, yes.
Thank you. I just had one quick question. I understand better why you're asking not to have the berm in the 40-foot setback. But one question that came up for me is on the 20-foot going to a 10-foot. Why not just move the other side? Take the 10-foot out of the other side of the development instead of the freeway side. In other words, is it require 20-foot on one side and 20-foot on the other side, or is it just the side that's facing the, you know?
The planning area standards requires 20 feet on both sides,
both sides
and the rear.
Okay.
We only have jurisdiction over the 101 side.
Okay.
So
that's the part.
The project plan is 10 feet. On the other side, 10 on the rear.
Okay.
But we only have jurisdiction.
On the front, that's the part I didn't
mention. Since this is a discretionary permit, there are other things where we can use our discretion on and ask the applicant if for any kinds of trade-offs, concessions, however you want to characterize it. And as long as it's freely agreed to by the applicant, then that doesn't violate that we're insisting on it, correct? We're just asking.
I would, yeah. I would maybe look to Whitney on that one.
What?
I wouldn't characterize our discretion as being quite that broad, but I'll let the...
Thank you. Whitney McDonald from County Council's office. I think that if the applicant were to agree on a condition that's helpful for the constitutional nexus required in order to impose a condition on project. But the problem is the enforcement, because if they went ahead and agreed to a condition we weren't legally allowed to impose on them to begin with, they could potentially choose to not comply with it, and we would have no means of enforcing it.
Well, we would certainly hope that that would not occur. Okay, well,
I guess I'm not clear. We don't have authority over the 101 side of the park, or we do?
We do.
It's the other side that we don't have.
Other two sides.
So we could. So in theory, we're agreeing to go with 10 versus 20.
Well, that's what they're
asking for.
As part
of the conditional use permit.
That's what they're asking.
But we could still say we want the 20, and they either squeeze the whole park down or slide it over. There's no reason they cannot move it back and go to 10 feet on the east side.
They have already, haven't they?
Is it only 10 feet on the other side also then?
Yes.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, yes. That's the part that I didn't get.
Oh, I did. Yeah, because there was no dimensions on it. Okay.
Again, that's the side that we have no jurisdiction over.
Good. Just quickly, on the 101 side.
The site plan that shows where the RV spaces are.
I don't know how to measure the distance. Your 10 feet represents, you tell me what the 10 feet represents.
It's property line, from the property line.
Yeah.
East.
To an RV?
No.
To what?
That's just the landscaping strip.
Okay. To where development starts, which would mean paving or something like that.
It's a landscape. It's actually a buffer, and I don't know why we call it a setback, but it's the fence.
The full ten feet are landscape.
Yes.
Okay, does that clear it up?
And then once that 10 feet stops, the project starts. So whatever, it could be sidewalk, it could be grass, it could be trees.
Correct.
Whatever.
I see the bays and the RVs, and I take it the bays the beginning of the development from outside of the 10-foot buffer or side setback. Is that right?
Now maybe if we go through the project, the applicant
anyway,
presentation.
Yeah,
that's something that
could be answered.
Tommy, I think we need to move forward and try to get that clarified.
I'm just trying to define what a setback means in this particular case. We don't have buildings over there.
I think we did do that.
Yeah, and I think what she said was, right, this is a landscape buffer, really, not a setback. There's a 10-foot landscape
buffer.
It's
a setback. Yeah. It's the same thing it's meant all year long last year. It hasn't changed. It's a setback. And it's supposed to be 20 feet, and they want 10 feet. So whatever, however it's measured, which it's they want it half of that amount. So the question I have for you is, why does it matter? I mean, exactly.
Well, you say however it's measured, and that's what I'm asking is, how is it measured? And that's all I'm asking. It's just a very simple, straightforward question, and maybe it can come forward.
It's measured
as
from,
we talk.
It's measured from the road back. That's how it's measured. It isn't to anything, as Karen was describing. It's a requirement for landscaping to be in that area. So you take from the road, edge of right-of-way, and you measure back.
Yeah, from the fence.
From the edge
of right-of-way.
Yeah. I don't know where that is.
Okay.
Yeah, the right-of-way may be broader than the road. But so, not to muddy the water, which I just...
Well, anyway, I'm sure the applicant will be able to answer this. And the other question I had is, where do the signs go? I don't see them on the plot plan. And maybe the applicant can answer that.
And they are shown on the site plan.
I see two little black rectangles at the corners on Wellstone.
It's out by the fence.
Yes. So one is at the corner of Wellstone and 101. And the other is at the entrance to the driveway entrance.
Okay.
Okay. Planning staff light on. Is that Ms. McDonald again?
Yes, it is. Thank you. I just wanted, before we closed staff presentation, I just wanted to clarify. I believe we might have a revised finding for the Planning Commission to consider for the variance finding.
I did not draft anything.
Okay. We may have a revised finding for you.
Okay. Could you hold that for later?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Griffin, did you have a comment to make?
No. I guess our lights are switched. So when you see staff, it's probably County Council.
Oh, okay. I see. All right. My limited comment, two, I guess, as far as this sign, and we can explore this a little bit more depth later, but I would want to make sure that the positioning of the signs and the setback did not impede the visual, did not affect safety. In other words, be a visual impediment when pulling up to the intersection and not being able to clearly see oncoming traffic. And it's just the one's probably not a problem. The other one might be. So we can look into that a little bit later. And so my one question is, how did you decide which side was the front? Couldn't it have been 101, that really long side?
Nope. Narrowest frontage adjoining a public road.
And that's defined
in the ordinance.
Defined in the ordinance.
Okay, that's just not the null rule. That's in the ordinance.
No.
Okay.
It is.
All right.
The ordinance.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. I think that's it for commissioner comments at this time. So I would open public comment and start with welcome the applicant, raise your hand, and the commission will get the message that you support what is said without you actually having to come to the podium. That would reduce the amount of time we all have to spend here today. But I am gratified to see such a high level of public participation in this important government process. So with that, Mr. Fidelia Barrios, did I pronounce that correctly?
No, I'm Bruce Jordan. Represent the applicant.
I'm sorry. Do you have a speaker slip in, sir?
No, because I was the applicant. I didn't
fill
one out.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll think about that. All right. Please state your name again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bruce Jordan.
Okay.
I'm president of Jordan Architects. We represent the applicant here today. And thank you for taking the time to review our proposal. First off, I'd like to compliment your staff, especially Karen Nall and Glenn Marshall. We've been working closely with them for almost a year now, and they've done a tremendous job. They're very professional, very responsive, and I want to thank them personally for their involvement in the project. Seeing that there is some potential opposition, I'd like to request of the chairman the ability to rebut any testimony here today.
Granted, that's a normal part of our process.
Thank you. I'd like to start by saying that we have been through the staff report and we concur with the conditions of approval, so we're prepared to accept them as is. I'd like to start by just introducing you to the developers. The applicant's name is Siempre Adelante. That is actually Mr. Jeff Marston and his family and his partners, local businessmen, local to this area, local to this neighborhood, and this is going to be a long-term family business in conjunction with their other businesses in the area. This is the subject site, and Karen, can I get a pointer from the mouse? Oh, there it is. Okay. I got it. Thank you. So here's 101. Here's Wilsona Road. Here's the self-storage, the first one and the second addition here, and then the residential property here. The existing Dollhouse Museum is seen from 101, just to put in a frame of reference. This is the overall site plan. We have a diagram of the individual spaces, and I will clarify that point about the landscape setback and how it all works. This is the clubhouse. This is the office location, the convenience market, the restrooms, and so forth. And then we have this dense landscape barrier that's been foremost in the design of this entire project all the way. That particular barrier goes all the way around, and although there's been some jurisdiction issues here, I'm here today to show you how we comply with basically all of the county ordinances.
Great.
And we're going way above board with what the state requires. We've also included this in a riparian area in the center to the north end of the site. You'll see that here. And that is in conjunction with the LID measures to help enhance the recharge portion of it, and it's going to be a natural riparian area that separates the two sides of the RV spaces. This is truly going to be an upscale, state-of-the-art RV resort. It's a little over 11 acres. We've got the clubhouse with two ballrooms and a billiard room. We've got the office, convenience market, laundry, exercise room, which is oriented to the pool, and very fairly elaborate and more than required shower facilities. We have the remote restroom to cut down the travel distance. We have a 20 by 40 adult pool with a swim-up counter and a patio cover over it. We have a free-form rockscape jacuzzi. We have a children's pool. And we have covered patio fireplace areas, barbecue areas, and recreational opportunities on site. I wanted to speak a little bit how we conceived this whole design. And the first thing we did when we started looking at this design, how do we protect the neighbors? How do we get RVs in and out of here most efficiently? Hold down the noise and the impact to the neighbors. So that is the whole basis for this design. So as you see here from the arrow, this is the entry, and it's actually a two-lane entry coming in, two 12-foot lanes, and then there's a pull-out lane right here to allow people to go to the office. So the distance is about 350 feet from Highway 101. So there's a tremendous amount of stacking distance, and then there's another 350 feet in here. So there's really about 700 feet of overall stacking distance. Plus, when you add the double lane entry, there is a considerable amount of stacking, and it was designed that way so never would at a peak time would an RV back up onto Wilsona Road. Moment to show you how we comply with county ordinances, even though we aren't obligated to because of the state jurisdiction. In this case, the allowable density of 15 units to the acre would permit 175 units. We're at 130, which is 25% less dense than would be permitted, or about 45 units. The county's minimum RV space is 20-foot minimum by 750 square feet. Our minimum is 25-foot and 900 feet. And 900 feet is the smallest of them in a corner. Most of them average about 1,500 to 1,700 square feet, and are about 70 feet long. On a FAR basis, the allowable FAR is 0.4. We're at a 0.02, or 6% of the permitted density as you talk about constructed buildings. Landscape, in this case, is about 35% of the site. And after our first submittal, we increased the landscape area to facilitate more of the LID measures and more recharge for the water issue. This is an overall view looking southeast. You've got the office over here. You've got the clubhouse on this side. And this slide, the 101 is off to your right. The swim-up adult pool here. So this is the primary activity area. This is a view of the clubhouse looking northeast, and this is after the remodel. We've used the same style of architecture, same cupola and so forth here in the convenience market and the office. And the reason for this cupola at this location, as I showed you in that original slide, since it's about 300 feet back on the property from Wilsona Road, it's to give that clear symbol of where you go to check in. So it's crystal clear, and there's a primary element that you recognize there. This is a view taken in an actual slide of the northbound 101. You see the park here, and this was rendered from the actual landscape plan. Now, one thing I'll point out, you see an orange roof here. We're not proposing an orange roof. We left that orange because if you put in the charcoal roof, it disappeared into the landscape and you didn't see it. So I left it orange just so you could see it. But the cupola that's here is the original Dollhouse Museum cupola. So this space here is right-of-way with Caltrans. This area is outside the property line. Our property line is right down here. This whole concept of green fence that I'll be talking about is done to facilitate the low vegetation, to block the low views. We have the taller canopies to block the mid views and the tall views. So the whole idea was to create this very dense landscape barrier around the project. If you drive by now, you'd see the self-storage there. This is going to screen a lot of that out. So the predominant scene that you're going to see at this intersection is this new landscaping. I'm not going to dwell on this jurisdiction issue. Title 25 of the state of California gives the state jurisdiction over the permits and most aspects of the design of the on-site design of the project. And the state and the county has jurisdiction essentially of the off-site. So there's a blending of jurisdictions here, but in this case, we believe we meet all and the intent of all of that and far exceed most. The point being that we've worked with both the state and the county to get to this point. Now, let's talk a little bit about what we've done to date. We submitted this project back in April. I was deemed complete in August, but in that time, in preparing all the engineering reports and so forth that go along with it, we've done a lot of community outreach. We went before the San Miguel Advisory Council on May 25th, spent some time going through all the issues with them, brought the renderings that you see today, and at the end of that meeting, we received a unanimous approval from them. We heard that at the staff suggestion there were still questions of the neighbors, so we attended a second meeting on July 27th with the San Miguel Advisory Council. I spent about an hour and a half presentation. There were a lot of people there. We went through all of the issues, and at the end of the day, most everybody felt fairly comfortable with the project. Not all, but most.
Mr. Jordan, pardon me for interrupting, but you've hit your allotted time. Do you think you could wrap up in another minute or two?
Probably 3-4 minutes, but I'll make
okay,
haste
please
to,
make an
to
effort.
Get there.
And anyone speaking against the project, I would be very generous in granting that okay. time, too. So
today we have conditional approval from Caltrans, which includes a northbound deceleration lane for the project that will enhance safety for the entire neighborhood. We have Regional Quality Water Control Board conditional approval. We have CAL FIRE approval. Air quality, we have, and there's several others that I won't go into. A little bit about the demographics. This is an upscale resort. The demographic 8 to 9 in the winter and 9 to 5 in the summer. At one of the San Miguel hearings, some people were saying that we're going to have dune buggies and dirt bikes riding through here, and I assure you that that is not the case, and that would destroy the marketing efforts that we are employing for this rather high-ended resort. So that is not the case at all. They will not be here. They'll be at Glymis and other places, but they will not be here. Again, very upscale resort with a lot of activity plans and so forth for the guests. I put together this composite plan so that you could see the context. I apologize for the low graphics when we imported it. It was kind of low. So you've got the 101 at the top, Wilsona Road off to the left. And I wanted to show you, we consolidated the activity area, the pools, and where the noise gets generated in this location into the nearest residential lot. It's about 450 feet. So it's a long way. The existing self-storage, there's a lot to screen out. All of these houses are blocked from the resort and the activity areas. We located those here for that reason, minimum impact to the residents. Now, your packets were supplied with a lot of letters of support. They were delivered. I have a whole group of them here today. If you want them, I can hand them in. I'll leave that up to you, but they are here. And we have a tremendous amount of support from the residents. Now, these indicate all of the letters that are in your file of just the people that are contiguous and adjacent to the site. So virtually every property that abuts this park has a corresponding letter of support and requesting your approval in your packet.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jordan.
A little bit on the design. I'll go through this quickly.
Please.
We have spent a lot of time to do the most drought-tolerant. We're using a drip irrigation system with a smart controller. Smart controller reads the rainfall, shuts the irrigation system down when it rains. Landscape has been designed to screen out the resort from neighboring properties. The mature landscaping, very, very dense along the 101, and I'm going to speak about that landscape setback issue in just a second. I've got a slide on it here. And we have the 40-foot on the front. I'm also going to speak about the berm.
Mr. Jordan, I have to enforce the limits and what you've gone beyond, so please wrap up in 1 minute.
All right. Here are the trees, and the trees that you see here are not specimens. These have been selected and contracted for the property. So you're looking at a man over here. So this is about a 20-foot tree. We were able to get very mature trees, bigger than actually specified in the landscape plan. So we're going to go in there and provide instant landscaping. That's the whole game plan. The 40-foot with the berm, and I need to, just a second to explain this. The berm, we have an emergency vehicle access point here, and a berm would be interrupted. It would be hard to continue over here, so really it wouldn't serve any purpose. And berms increase runoff and erosion. We're doing the opposite. We have a bioswale in this area. A 3-foot high that's mandated in the ordinance would not do anything to screen the RVs, so we have a very dense 40 feet of landscaping here. Now, let me speak to this issue and the confusion in the beginning. I put these lines on here. This 10-foot dotted line right here that runs all the way through is what we're requesting as to be the minimum. And what you'll see is a little tiny triangle here that projects into it. This is the 20-foot line, and there's fully landscaped there. So in reality, in each one of these spaces, the landscape comes in 20 feet and then diminishes because of the angle down to a minimum of 10. There are no buildings, there are no structures, and just an occasional corner of an RV. But because we have selected such dense and mature trees, this wall of landscaping is virtually going to block it out 100%.
Okay, at this time I'd like to ask commissioners if they have any questions for the applicant. Okay, we may have some later, and after public comment you will be given the opportunity, as you requested, to speak again to anything new that may have been mentioned by the public. Thank you.
Would it be appropriate to speak to the water issue?
It might be when you come back.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. As I mentioned earlier, we have 44 speaker slips. So first one here was Fidelia Barrios. If you would like to speak, Ms. Barrios, is it Barrios? Yes, thank you. Did you hear my little speech earlier about the 44 speaker slips? And if others who had submitted a speaker slip might just raise their hand in support of what you might have to say, or not if you're speaking against it. So anyway.
It's in the critical stage. This is a very important factor to us. We see that the holding tanks that they have on their project is 40,000 gallons to sustain 300 people in a 10-acre parcel. So based on a 2.1 assessment that they presented during a hearing meeting that we just collected information. The drainage itself, their report, they did not include that it flooded out the neighboring properties. I've been in the area for 17 years. And I can tell you as a fact that the runoff is not adequate what's sustained now. There's a reason why we have serious drainage piping there now that exists, because it is not sufficient there either. And especially once they put the Marston project in, that even made it worse. So it already can't sustain it, and the rainfall and the existing rain. I'm sorry, I'm repeating myself. I'm trying to hurry up. So that's going to be an additional issue. As far as the development of the septic tanks, it's going to hold 17,500 gallons of raw sewage with the leach field. And the drainage areas is located also in the same vicinity submitted by the applicant, butting up to the residential community. The existing septic holding pond is about 0.3 miles from the huge infrastructure. And the septic tank alone was done in the 1970s.
Ms. Barrios, you can have some additional time, so you don't have to speak so fast.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
The old infrastructure and the well field contamination is a valid and serious concern. And in the staffing report, the environmental health had said that the holding pond should be destroyed. I want to go on about the traffic issue. Caltrans suggested a turn lane in front from 101 to Wasona. And the RV assessment that was done showed that there is not enough clearance in the middle of the highway for the RV and car towing, because typically an RV is going to pull a vehicle as well, and that's not being even presented in this applicant's presentation or with county. Traffic safety, the North County, we had a high patrolman, Mr. Maple, that came to the July 27th San Miguel Advisory Committee, and he said that the increased drunk driving went up to 24%. With the increased use of cell phones and DUIs. So this is a huge concern to us, because the attraction is 50-ish type people who are going to be visiting the wineries, and they're going to have to cross back and forth through the Highway 101 based on the San Miguel Advisory Committee comments by the applicant. There was an RV accident on Monterey this past year, and that speed limit on Monterey Road is 50 miles an hour. So there's no way that you're going to stop these RVs from bypassing the Wasona turnoff, because anybody that's driven the Wasona roadway knows that if you're coming off of 101 and turning onto Wasona, you're not going to make that turn. I have a truck. I don't normally stay in my lane because unless I come to almost a standstill. It's just a bad turn, and if vehicles are waiting there, you're just not going to make it. You're going to have to let those cars go by and then come into that spot. And then there's a monument on the right side, so you couldn't pull out and then come in. So the applicant's going to have to do some more setbacks there as well on their property. The traffic study that they did was only a 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes in the afternoon, and 15 minutes in the evening, and they thought that satisfied the traffic report. And again, you know, we have to be looking at what's going to be the safety concerns for the public. I mean, nobody was noticed on the other side of the highway. Nobody was noticed past the 300 feet unless somebody told you about it by word of mouth. And that's where all the rumors got. People were curious and wondering and all of that.
Okay. Ms. Barrios, could you wrap up in
the
next minute?
Thank
Very
you
good.
So much.
Okay, sure.
The safety, there's no way to prevent the 130 RVs to come up and down our road. They're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They can check out anytime they want. This is definitely infringing on our privacy. I think the decent thing they could do is at least put the brick barrier, like I suggested, and just scale this project down. The water usage enough is concerned. The septic is I'm really concerned about. And the last thing is, you know, the first responders are your two deputies that serve the whole North County. We don't have the funds to sponsor a lot of help with 300 people coming into that one area with pools and jacuzzis and clubhouses and drinking. So, and then the CAL FIRE is also located in Templeton as the first responders. Lastly, I just want to say that the archaeology there is across the street is a documented site that wasn't presented also in the impact report. And also down below behind us was also sites that wasn't identified either. I found pestles on my own property as well as broken. So there is a lot of activity there that's not even addressed here either. And lastly, I also viewed some of the people that said yes to the project, and unfortunately, most of them are business-oriented people. They're not people that are close to retirement that have been here a long time that we're concerned about our...
I didn't see Jamie Storm step up. Oh, please. You're and those, when I say on deck, please step up to the vacant podium. This would be Tyler Balin, or... Best I can do. Behlen or H. Okay. Well, Mr. Storms,
yes,
please proceed.
Jamie Storms. I'm a resident in the area and have
okay.
been an owner in the residence of this community for 19 years, and I'm one of the people who could have just raised my hand in support of this project.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Bailey. And on deck, Michael Joyce.
My name's Tyler Bailey. I believe that a lot of people here are just here for blind support, and I just wanted to send out the request. Anyone here to support it, please raise your hand.
Okay, thank you very
Probably
much.
Probably save a lot of time.
Yes, we
and
really
I
appreciate that.
Thank you for your time and effort.
All right, you're welcome. Mr. Joyce, are you going? Okay. I'm not going to go through the remaining 38 names, but is there anyone else who would like to speak? Sure. If there's an empty...
My name's on there. My name is Stan McDonald. I'm a commercial real estate appraiser from the North County.
Would you mind starting that over again? Because
sure.
I'm not sure the microphone picked that up for the record.
My name is Stan McDonald. I'm a commercial real estate appraiser from the North County. In terms of the setback, one, you're talking about the end of the U.S. 101 right-of-way to 10 feet. So that's for the landscaping setback. The reason why it's 20 feet is to hide the commercial service improvements in the area. And for the most part, the improvements in the area are downright ugly. And this would be the nicest looking improvement in the area by far. So I had to use that term because it's true. In terms of the turn lane and turning into it, I think that would mitigate some of the issues presented earlier. I don't think too many of the RVs are going to travel on Monterey Road. I think they're going to stay pretty much on Wellsona and go to US 101. I'm encouraging you to approve this project. I think it's a well-designed project. I think it will bring revenue and also additional people to the area. I think it's good for the economy. I think it's good for our county. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Mr. McDonald. Please state your name.
Hi. Excuse me. My name is Elaine Duran. I live at 110 Hart's Place, which is a house at the north end of the project. I welcome the project. It takes care of the unknown, and it's good to know that it's going to be a quiet and clean RV resort and takes away from having a concrete plant or a truck terminal there. And the landscaping that they have should be stunning the way they presented it. And I just want to have the board encourage to do the project.
Okay, Ms. Duran, I'm going through these speaker slips as quickly as I can. Did you fill one out?
Yes.
Okay.
It'll be probably on the bottom.
I will find it.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next speaker, please.
My name is Janine Rucker, and I did fill out a slip.
Okay. Thank you,
okay.
Janine.
Thank you. Okay. The reason why there's not more people here possibly to speak is because back in April and May, we were not noticed as neighbors who actually physically lived there at this project site. I did attend the July meeting. Our family has lived on Monterey Road for over 15 years. Before we built our house, we had to pay the county to do a noise report, and all we were doing was building a house with three little kids. Now, I'm not sure that the noise level study has been done adequately as far as all the different RVs with the everything running and that type of thing for the noise. The traffic study was done in 2005 to 2009. That's what was stated by the applicant. Much has expanded since 2009. There are additional businesses within a much increased traffic flow. That is my primary concern, is the traffic flow. There's converging trucks from the San Paso truck stop that is now open. It was closed for a couple of years, probably when this traffic study was done. It is now open. It is running full bore with a lot of trucks that will be coming out from Wellsona from the west side. Trucks are turning in. The RVs will be also doing the same thing. Right now, there are many of our neighbors that do not use the Wellsona on-ramp or off-ramp at all because it's way too dangerous. When you go down to X-Line, there's also been an increased amount of businesses on Stockdale Road, which is good for our local economy, don't get me wrong. But what needs to be done is a little bit more the traffic studies done so that we don't put the cart before the horse. If you go all the way down to Cal Ag, which is usually the...
Thank you, Ms. Rucker. Unfortunately, the mail has not gone through. I don't have a speaker slip for you. Would you mind filling out another one and turning it in? Oh, it is right there. Okay, we do have it.
Hello.
Hi, welcome. Please state your name.
I'm Sandra Hernandez, and I live on the corner of Monterey and Wellsona. My property is actually on two sides next to the two projects that the Marsdens have already completed. So what I would like to say is, as a resident and a homeowner, being adjacent to two businesses, what type of a business person the Marsdens are. I feel that the quality and the security of the area has improved since those two businesses have come in. Because they are recreational and storage facilities, there is 24 hours a day, day and night, security cameras, as well as lighting that goes around those buildings. I know that because of that, the quantity of crime in that particular area has decreased. As well as the security, I have two children at home, as well as a business, and I feel much more secure about the lighting. The traffic is not nearly as much of an impact as was proposed with those projects. It's very quiet, it's very clean, it's very neat, and it actually has improved. I actually look out at one of the storage facilities outside my living room window, and I can honestly say I do not have one complaint about the way they take care of their properties or they run their businesses. So I would like to encourage you to pass this. I think it has been a benefit to our community, and I think it will improve the overall look of Paso Robles coming from the north, coming into Paso Robles. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hernandez. Good morning.
Hi, my name is Brent Wingate. I do have a slip there.
All right.
I'm one of the owners of Central Coast Propane. As of this year, we will have been in that area for over 20 years. We will be able to actually see the new project, and after having been using Wellsona Road for ingress and egress for 20 years and watched the dollhouse go into various states of disrepair over the years, we look forward to this project from an aesthetic standpoint. We believe that it will clean up the area and improve that entire area there, and so I would like to speak in support of the project.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wingate. Okay, I don't see anyone else rushing up to the podium, and I thank you for your cooperation in helping to expedite our meeting here today. It's about lunchtime. Mr. Jordan, we would like to afford you the opportunity to, if anything was spoken that you'd like to respond to, please be cognizant that we're due for a lunch break here shortly. So,
okay, I'll try to be brief and wrap up.
Okay.
Karen, could you put the slides back on? First off, I'd like to speak to what Ms. Arios had said about a smaller scale. First off, the state regulates the scale, and we're considerably below that. And if we were to apply the county standards, we're 25% below the county standards on density. So it would be completely arbitrary to do that. We have wider streets. We have 32-foot wide streets in there, bigger turning radiuses than required. Everything about this project has been quality, and to reduce the scale of it would make no sense. It would make it economically unviable, and we would simply walk away and go home, and none of this landscaping or improvements would occur. About the walls, I think walls are totally inappropriate. I've designed a lot of projects in my time, and I've gotten lucky a few times and won some national design awards, and I think that to put walls in this project instead of that landscaping and the green fence that we've proposed would be a big mistake. And I think that it would be long. This property is about 1,200 feet long on the 101 frontage, and I think a long straight wall would be the last thing that we would want to do aesthetically. The landscaping as proposed is really going to be a very green wall, and it was designed specifically to screen the RVs and the buildings. So as you drive up and down 101 now, you have a lot of different product types, propane people, recycling, and so forth, that aren't screened. This is going to be the only project on 101 that's afforded this level of screening. So I think we have really gone overboard to do that. The water. All I can say on the water, in fact, I'd like to go to that slide right now. I do have a thing on that slide. It's an important consideration, so I'll go through this quickly as I can. But the water issue, as staff has reviewed this, has come up with the fact that there's a net reduction in water use. So we're not adding to the water problem. We're contributing to the solution. And we're using the most efficient state. It was approved on December 5th by the state. Tons of engineering reports, studies, percolation reports, all of that. I'm sorry, but for Ms. Arias to get up here and just arbitrarily say that without any engineering background is just simply not the case. This project has gone through considerable scrutiny at both state and county level, and we comply with all of that. Regarding the Caltrans issue and the traffic, the Caltrans issue, again, Ms. Arias should be thanking us. At no cost to the community, no cost to the county, we're going to be installing a northbound deceleration lane. The whole community is going to benefit. I have a report from Caltrans that says there's been no RV accidents in that area in the last 5 years. The accident rate for that intersection is well below the state average. So it's an exceptionally safe intersection. It's in a stretch of highway that's got a long, straight vantage point. There are no curves. There's no hidden aspect of it. It's a very, very safe intersection. And again, it's kind of arbitrary to come up here after we've submitted thousands of pages of engineering reports that's been scrutinized by the county and also by Caltrans. And Caltrans, we have conditional approval. I have the letter with me here today if you'd like to see it, accepting our design for the northbound deceleration lane. They scrutinized the level of the center island and the highway. All of that was looked at, considerable scrutiny. The traffic engineers went back and did an addendum to the report. The report was done in 2010. The addendum was done in 2011 and updated. There was no report in 2009. So everything that we're doing is the latest and greatest. And again, I'll just speak to this water issue. Tier 3 projects require a minimum of two LID measures. We have five LID measures. We're employing them all. And I won't go through them in each in detail, but we've gone overboard. This whole thing with traffic, again, the traffic report has been highly scrutinized. The level of traffic is very, very low. 480 Ts is a very, very low number. It's a level of intersection at Wilsona Road at the park entry is a level of service A. It will remain a level of service A. So
okay. Well, I appreciate your detailed responses to the good comments from the public. Since Mr. Jordan's at the podium, do any commissioners have any questions?
If I might just wrap up with a couple of items on the other comments that were made.
Okay.
I'll try to keep it very brief.
Okay.
It was mentioned that this project is going to create impacts and not pay for itself. This project is going to provide $65,000 in facility fees to the county and numerous other fees. It's going to provide about $200,000 a year in TOT tax. It's going to provide about 9 full-time jobs. It's going to during the operation of the park, and it's going to be about 40 jobs during construction. So there's a tremendous amount of benefit that this project brings to the community. We're paying our fair share. We're putting in the intersection. We're putting in the drainage improvement that solves the drainage for the whole community. So this project should be looked at as one of, this is a community-oriented project that does a lot for this local community. And so I really feel that those comments are inappropriate, not well thought out, and I ask you to approve our project today.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jordan. Well, since commissioners don't appear to have any comments at this time, I would, before lunch, if I thought we could wrap this project up by 1:30, but I don't. Pardon me? We could go till 1:30, but I don't, without incurring excessive extra charges. But I'm
good with that.
Okay, this is why I wanted to have a conversation here with the commission. I want to be sure there's plenty of time to discuss the project. And this is in your district, Commissioner Irving.
I'll be happy to go with what the rest of the commission wants. But can we go straight through to 1:30?
Yeah,
that's good with me.
Yeah, it's either stop at 12:15 and go straight through to 1:30.
Those are the choices that we have. Commissioner Murphy, how do you see this, Commissioner Topping?
I don't think we'll need that much time, but I think we can get done by 1:30.
Okay.
Think,
yeah, keep going.
Okay, and I think that's good for all the folks that are here because we have to be respectful of your time as well, but we do want to give due deliberation to this project. So Okay, I'll take it back to the commission for discussion and close public comment. Commissioner Irving, you,
yes.
The commissioner from the district,
thank
may
you.
Speak first.
Yeah, this is quite an interesting project, and I certainly appreciate the applicant's road access.
Yes.
Okay. And then let me get right into the questions. I had asked you previously on equating the projected use in terms of a single-family house of acre-feet per year. So could you back us up a little bit and go through the water use and how you come to the decision that this is actually going to use less water than the historical use? That would be the first question, and then I will have questions for Mr. Marshall.
Okay. It's written up in the staff report as well in the negative declaration. So what we did, I used quite a few sources.
Mm-hmm.
I used their engineer to tell us how much was the outside water use, how much landscaping water. But I relied on our health department, Brad Pryor, to evaluate, because he was looking at the water system. So he needed to evaluate how much water they were going to use on a daily basis to determine if the water system they were designing was adequate. He concluded 10,800 gallons per day. Okay. At the same time, the Regional Water Quality Control Board was analyzing the waste discharge. They also had to analyze how much discharge per day. They both came to the conclusion separately about 10,800 gallons per day for indoor use.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The historic use, we went back and forth with the applicant quite a bit. They wanted credit for a cow-calf operation that was on the site. We concluded that we're not going to give any kind of credit for a cow-calf operation. However, it may have been. They may have irrigated the site for years. That could have been true. Through the Paso Robles groundwater basin studies, through the discussions I believe your commission had, it was real clear direction that no one would give credit for ag water. So even though that may have been considered more like a home occupation or, you know, more of a, I don't know, a 4-H kind of a situation, we didn't allow them any credit for the cow-calf operation. So we relied on a 65-seat restaurant. We got the numbers confirmed. I used their engineer, but confirmed every number with our building department and the county health department. So we feel really good about those numbers.
Good. That clarifies that.
One more kind of critical point with this is when you're determining the net increase, they're given credit for recharge.
Right.
So you come up with this big number, but then on this particular site, the regional board, Regional Water Quality Control Board, was adamant that 90% or more of the water used will go into will be recharged due to the high percolation rate for this particular soils.
Thank you. Now that's the recharge using out of the septic systems. That's
correct.
Not including the recharge from the captured runoff in the retention basins. Is that correct?
Correct. We did not give any credit to the retention basins. Okay. Landscaping water is not recharge. It's just the indoor water that's put right into the septic system.
Do you know the production records on the on-site well, which is to be used for irrigation, and the off-site well, which I believe is on the storage site? Do you know what those wells are producing?
Let me look in that water in the ND. I don't have that figure right in my head.
Well, I would presume the applicant knows off the top of your head.
And again, to make a point, the water system, Brad Pryor with the health department, verifies that there's adequate water, well water, to run the public water system.
100 gallons per hour.
On which well?
per minute, excuse me, 100 gallons per minute on the off-site well.
Okay.
Adjacent to it. The on-site well, we don't have a record.
Do you know the depth of that well?
300 feet.
300 feet. Thank you. Going back to the septic question, on one of your slides, I don't see, or actually in the staff report, I don't see the location of these holding ponds that are down apparently near the river.
Yeah, there's an off-site septic system. The septic system, it's a tank and leach field. It's about an acre site. Mm-hmm. There is an exhibit, should be in your packet.
Do you know
that shows the location?
I guess
I must have
missed that. But
it is
again addressing
well
addressing one of the questions,
which went straight to the regional board,
and they have approved it. Okay, right.
So it is a series of on-site, but majority of
on-site collections that then go off-site for leaching.
Right. Let me verify that. Critical point for you is there any leaching on site? And maybe there are engineers here.
I can address that.
Actually, it's a combination of the two for the leaching. There's on-site trenching for leaching, and then it's augmented off-site that was built in 1982. This property is owned, the area for leaching is owned in fee by the applicant, so it's all under the same ownership. And it's connected via easement.
Percentages of on-site leaching versus the off-site leaching?
90-10.
On-site?
On-site is the smaller number.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yes.
I'm obviously addressing the concern of some of the public about the potential for their wells, for any kind of contamination of their wells in the vicinity with that high percolation rate. How likely is things likely to occur? How likely is the possibility of any contamination? Seems that most of this is going to go off-site down to a site that has already been approved by the regional board.
Right. Well, and they approve the whole system,
and they
make sure.
As we well know,
separation between
right.
Other wells and septic and leach fields.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, this system was conceived when the site was approved for or anticipated for a hotel and a retail center. It was sized for that. It was constructed in 1982. It was built and sized for that. We analyzed it a couple of different ways. A regional quality control board asked that we augment. We came back with a revised design, and that's
great.
What was approved on December 5th.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Marshall.
Oh, Commissioner Irving, before you ask to change the subject matter to traffic, could I follow up on your water portion
sure.
of the question? Okay. There's made mention of a 40,000-gallon water storage tank. Is that accurate? There's a 40,000-gallon water storage tank?
That's for firefighting.
That's a firefighting tank? Do you have a storage tank for domestic water?
Yes.
And what size would that be?
And that would be part of the water system. It should be in there.
The water tank storage for domestic is 20,000 gallons.
Okay.
The rest is for fire.
Okay. Well, that works out to be about 150 gallons per RV. And what was the figure per RV? What was it, 10? That's what?
65.
That's twice, pardon me?
How many gallons per day?
The 10,800 divided by the 134 is what, 70?
We actually did 65 gallons.
Okay.
The 10,800 gallons is all indoor water. So it's all the RVs, it's the clubhouse, it's the shower, laundry facility, it's the combined water use.
The 10,800?
Right. So the figure that we use per RV is 65 gallons.
But there's 20,000 storage. Could you help reconcile those two numbers?
Perhaps I can jump in. You don't have to actively have a storage on site for what you're going to use. Your well pumps and fills that storage up constantly.
Well, they have twice as much as...
It's to take the peak demand. in the morning when somebody gets up to take a shower, there's more available, it drains quicker, the pump keeps it filled up. The other thing I'd like to point out, I did submit a study prepared by Harvard University to the staff that suggests that RVs use 27 gallons a day. They chose not to use it, and I understand that their mandate is to be more conservative, and I'm not here to challenge that. I'm here to say that Harvard University would say that your figures are high by 40%. And that's a margin of safety, and that's all I'm looking at, but we have provided that study to the county.
Okay. Yeah, just to reiterate that, we used peak water use, presuming 100% occupancy. So our numbers are based on that.
Yeah, my own research indicates there's a lot of different numbers. State of that's Utah is 100 gallons per RV. So that's their minimum required standard for peak. So I'm just trying to get as much certainty as I can about the numbers. Mm-hmm. I realize you've said you've checked them a number of different ways. Okay, well, I just wanted to have this conversation. And
while we're going on, if we're on water, just
Bill, just one on the water calculations. They're using 1.7 acre.
Yes, every part, the floor plans were evaluated by both the Environmental Health Department, Brad Pryor, and Dave Licaro with the Regional Board.
Okay, and this is as much for the applicant's protection as yeah. anything else. Yeah. I assume you did your own look-see at the water and satisfied yourself, even with the laundry facilities, you've got enough. Okay, that's it. Jim, thank you.
Can I chime in one more time? So is this right. calculation, it's the first time you've done it, was this calculation presented to the Board of Supervisors, or was it created at their along their guidelines, suggested guidelines, or have they actually approved this calculation?
They approved the interim guidelines, and that's what I followed, the interim guidelines.
So did the guidelines have an example of these calculations, were they just verbal guidelines?
I was the guinea pig.
These are the first ones.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, didn't you have fun?
I did, actually.
Mr. Marshall, the Caltrans letter, as I had indicated in an email to Karen, did not think that the methodology was appropriate in the traffic study, and then I believe there was a response. There's two questions I really, well, actually probably three, because you probably covered drainage too. So the drainage, as I understand it now, everything is going to be coming off of 101 that would normally have flowed down Wellsona Road and flooded across Monterey will now be redirected to the retention basins. Is that
certainly Glenn Marshall, Public Works. They are actually. I've got Tim Tomlinson here, who's actually looking at the drainage study as we speak. And the general concept is all the water coming through the culverts under 101 get redirected through the basins or through on-site channels, eventually leading to discharge at the same location, but hopefully less volume and less intensity. And I'll let Tim take it.
Tim Tomlinson.
Thank you.
Works. Most of the water coming off of 101 is going to the big basins in the north. Most of the remainder goes to a subsurface basin they're constructing near the office building. And some water may actually still be flowing through the park, but in a reduced velocity manner. There are LIDs, there are long shallow basins that are slowing the water flow. It should be reducing the flow of water off the back end of the site, but it's not all flowing from the highway into those basins.
Yeah, but there's considerable improvement over current situation there, it would seem to me. Thank you, Mr. Thompson, appreciate it. The question I really have is this is a very upscale park, and I can see these very big RVs, towing vehicles. The issue of crossing over from the park to head southbound, did you have discussions with Caltrans about that? Was there adequate space there for them to literally to get across? Because I've watched trucks come out of the truck stop headed northbound, and where they seem to take up pretty much not just the median space, but certainly some of the lanes. So I'm concerned about that, and I'm also concerned, and also then I think a member of the public mentioned about
once you turn onto Wellsona Road, your comment letter said you would be Wellsona would be approved to improved to a certain standard. Will that have? Does that mean extra width along? I guess it would be the southern side of Wellsona Road to provide space for people to then turn into the park.
Sure.
See if I can follow all that.
I think I did. Let me know if I didn't hit all the responses. First, it's important to recognize that the intersection of 101 at Wellsona is under the jurisdiction of Caltrans Estate. The county maintains Wellsona Road and Monterey Road in the general proximity to this project. So when this project came for referral, our immediate concern was the intersection, let's get Caltrans involved. They requested a traffic engineer's report. That was submitted. It was returned to them with comments from both Public Works and Caltrans. And what they evaluated, as I recall, was this quote-unquote gap analysis, the distance between the northbound and southbound lanes of 101, how much storage is there for a vehicle coming across, stopping, in, let's say, a westbound vehicle leaving Wellsona, trying to go southbound on US 101. Can they cross the northbound lane, hold off? Is there a safe refuge area before they merge into the southbound? So that's the gap analysis. Also, what was looked at was the northbound US 101, right turn lane onto 101, and the storage capacity for southbound 101, left turn into Wellsona. The Caltrans was quite happy with that there was adequate deacceleration and storage capacity for the southbound left turn. There is no northbound right turn. They wanted some widening improvements. As part of those widening improvements, they'll have a full 12-foot lane. Usually it's 14 feet from the edge of pavement for width. They increase the radius of that right
turn. I have the same concern about the southbound turn.
Yes. When you're looking at an intersection level of service, you're looking at the timing it takes to get across the intersection. And as I recall, and I don't have the report in front of me, there was real no change in level of service that would cause this project to have a significant impact to the intersection.
Is the gap channelized?
No.
No, it's not. Are there no acceleration lanes in north and south either?
There is no and
southbound.
I think there is a southbound.
There's a southbound acceleration.
There is no northbound.
It's relatively short, the southbound acceleration.
Probably, I think so.
And that's what made me wonder about this whole issue of getting an RV out there and turned and, and getting going. Because that traffic is coming on at like 70, 75 miles an hour.
Completely understood. And I think the key point here is this is Caltrans jurisdiction.
And they found out.
And this was their determination. And Public Works would have supported whatever determination they wanted to make this a safe interchange.
Mr. Jordan, we'd be happy to call you to the podium when we need your input. Right now, this is commission.
Commissioners have any other questions on this traffic question then?
Lastly,
the Wellsona Road
width. This project would only be required to widen their frontage to complete an A1 standard, not the opposite side. So, nothing would happen on the south side of Wellsona, with the exception of the taper from the Caltrans improvements back to county maintained.
And do you feel there's adequate room there, though, for somebody to turn off, or will they stop traffic on Wellsona Road after they've turned off of 101, whether they've come north or south, and they're on Wellsona Road waiting to turn into that? Now, I understood the applicant's presentation on his extra distance, but and you concur with their presentation.
We looked at that in the traffic engineer's report. That was one of Public Works' concerns. Can you make sure all these vehicles get off? There's, I think we saw 480T on that section of Wellsona.
Seemed plenty good.
A++.
Okay, great. I had one. Then I guess this question comes back to Karen. Maybe you weigh in, or Cammy. I've heard concerns from the public about the fact that the RV usage might expand out onto using Monterey Road, particularly for merging northbound or going southbound, I suppose. Is that within our purview to condition, is it even possible to limit usage of a public road so that to encourage the RVs to not use Monterey Road?
I'd have Glenn answer, but
It's the use of the county public road.
It's the use of the public road.
It is a county. It is a public road.
Thank you. I just wanted to. I thought as much.
Now, we've had other projects where we've conditioned them.
Well, you could condition so that as part of when you check in or the information provided to the person who's going to use the site, that they offer a way in and a way out. IRV, and I have gone to places where they've said, don't do what your, for instance, what your GPS tells you to do because that'll get you into trouble. Go this way. And I think we could condition that the office, when they provide information to the people who are renting the sites, they could provide information to say, go this way.
Although this, Karen Nall, this site's so obvious. You're at the intersection of 101 and Wellsona. I'm also an RVer. You generally don't go on some roads you don't know. You go back to the obvious intersection.
Yeah. I'm really asking the question for the benefit of some requests I've had from members of the public on that. I'm not being an RVer, but I do drive a cattle truck and a cattle trailer, so I know what it's like to pull out onto the freeway.
Quite an unusual RV, Mr.
The nice. Yeah, yeah.
They're members of my
family. You'll get even one day.
The visibility at the Wellsona intersection is excellent.
Okay.
I don't know if Glenn wants to speak to that, but in my limited experience, it is one of the best visual to come out. You can see that the cars coming down the hill.
Good. Any other commissioners want to weigh in on this particular topic before I move to another one?
Go for it.
Great. Again, this comes back to the operation of the park and what we can do and not do. I did not see any, or maybe I am forgetting whether I did see it, an emphasis on recycling facilities within the park, both not only of Mr. Jordan.
I can address that. It is our intent to use 3-yard bins, the divisible bins, for recycle and rubbish. So we've already discussed this with San Miguel Rubbish, and we will be using the green and recycling that as well. So we fully intend to implement that, and we're fine with the condition to that.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Thomason, too.
So they were. Did I catch that? They're fine for the applicant is fine for a condition to that effect. So does that mean, Ms. Nall, you're going to add that condition?
I don't believe it's necessary. But
it's required by state.
Yeah, it's right. It's required by the state. So what he's saying is
it's a moot point then. Okay.
Yeah, that was kind of my question: is what we could do or not do, and if the state already has it as a requirement, I'm good with that. The surface of the park. Maybe this is for the applicant. Maybe for you. Is that an asphalt surface that they drive in on?
Yes.
But the spaces themselves are asphalt, or are they those permeable block?
All asphalt.
Type parking.
The spaces themselves are, each space will have a 20 by 40 concrete slab, and everything else is landscape and pervious surface. And that was designed that way purposely.
Pervious or impervious?
Pervious.
Pervious, okay.
And the drive aisles are asphalt.
The what?
The drive aisles.
Oh, okay, up and
the
down.
The internal drive aisles are asphalt. Right.
Thank you. That question has been answered. I did ask in whether you had a slide that showed the location of the holding ponds next to the river. It's not that important. If the regional board has signed off on it, knowing their restrictions, I would say I'm good with that. But I just was I was curious to see the location of it. And if there are any residences in the immediate neighborhood of those holding ponds.
And I know I have it on a maybe.
Does the applicant know? I mean, perhaps you could address that. But the question is, are there any residences in the immediate vicinity of those leech ponds?
There's one home that sits on a raised area, and this the area for leaching is considerable distance. I'm going to say a couple hundred feet, and an elevation maybe 20 feet lower than. So it's in an area considerable distance from the home, but the home that is closest to is one of the supporters. So this was discussed with them, looked at it. They have never had any problem with the leach field or anything, so I don't think that's an issue.
Thank you.
If it's necessary, I think one of my opening slides may show that area, and I could put a pointer on it for you. That would help.
I'd like that at some point. Back to park operations. In one of your in our exchange of emails, Karen, we did indicate that the park is under the state regulations and so therefore operates 24 hours a day. Within those regulations, are there requirements for reduced noise after a certain hour?
It would be back to the county noise ordinance. Would
so
apply.
Again at 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. things have to diminish.
Yes.
So we don't have a group of RVers pulling in and at the far end and turning on the boombox at 10 o'clock. Okay, thank you. That goes back under county ordinance. If there's a problem, members of the public have the ability to contact code enforcement.
And yes, I don't know how that will all function with state being the enforcement agency too, but the state did indicate that the county's noise ordinance would apply.
I thought I read in your report that while the state is the permitting authority, the county becomes the enforcement of the state's rules. No?
No. We are going to enforce our conditions.
Your conditions.
And then at the laundry list of different agencies that are responsible for their portions, but
do we know
who? Operation,
how do you contact a member of the state? The state, if there is a problem with the operation, is there anybody local in the county? Mr. Tomlinson.
Hi. The HCD, I'm Tim Tomlinson, does have people that respond to complaints in mobile home parks and RV parks. I do not know who the current person is, and I do not believe they are local, but we're in somebody's jurisdiction. They might know.
Thank you.
HCD, the inspector for this area, his name is Mike Wood. He's a resident of Paso Robles. He has a full van with computer equipment, the whole bit that he goes out to each site to monitor and stuff. So he's local.
Excellent.
His name is Mike Wood.
Thank you. Mr. Topping's question, I believe when I met with the applicant on site, he showed me some a really better description of what the landscaping is. It might answer Mr. Topping's questions.
The reason I'm asking is this is a highly visible site, and I think it's in the county's best interest to.
I'm convinced from what I've seen and what the pictures of the trees that they're bought that this is going to be a vast improvement over what we see on 101 North.
We're talking about dense landscaping. We're talking about dense and high and tall landscaping as well.
If you like, we can put the slide back on with the landscape plan.
I think Commissioner Christensen is showing me that it's dense. And
that should be satisfactory.
Well, I had one kind of similar question here. Is the landscape setback verse that you quoted us here in the report talked about 100% screening from 101. And our conditions of approval are only requiring a 50% screening of 101 in condition 5. And that kind of goes to what we're talking about here, what type of screening is going to be along that sign. If we're not going with the 100%, then that seems like that's going to have to be part of our variance, along with the reduction in the setback and elimination.
Actually, the planning area standard is 50% screening.
On bottom of 2.3, I'm reading the bottom of 2.3 where you appear to have plucked out a section of code and put it in here for our reference. Talks about 50%, and then it says, and full screening in side and rear yards if visible from Highway 101.
That's the planning area standard.
Right.
Whereas
the landscaping plan, I believe it is fully screened.
More dense.
Your microphone, Commissioner Tom.
It's more dense. It is.
Yes.
It's completely, it's continuous.
Yes.
And just to clarify, we wanted to do that. We wanted to provide that acoustical barrier for the RVers. So that's why we went to that length and actually purchased a trees larger than our landscape plan called for. So we exceed the county requirement in the local area standards by a considerable margin.
I'm just making the point that we're doing two variances of that paragraph, but we're also not requiring full screening on the 101 side of this project.
No, we believe it is full screening on the 101 corridor.
Well, but the condition of approval, number five, is for 50%. That's what I'm pointing out.
Excuse me. The bottom of page 2-3.
Yeah, and then I'm comparing it to 213, condition of approval number five.
The full screening is required in the side and rear.
And this is the side.
It is the side.
So that condition should be modified.
Yeah. On condition 213, number 5, is that what you're referring to?
That's what I'm referring to.
That should be 100%, shouldn't it?
This one, especially if you're going to reduce the width, it should be clear that that should be 100%.
Okay, so for the record, that changes from 50 to 100% on that condition number 5 on page 2-13. Commissioner Topping, did you have any further questions? Commissioner Murphy?
We hit setback and berm. Talked about the fence. We didn't discuss the sign issue. I've almost given up on it. One place, we don't want them over 12 feet. Another place to be in the setbacks, we want them over 12 feet, I assume, so they can see under them for traffic safety.
That's correct. And you had a concern about whether it would impinge
where
any visibility.
It's going to be, and it didn't show up on the visualization that they didn't have the sign in there. I assume it's sitting back among the trees. It's not in the right-of-way. It's actually in the setback.
I think Mr. Marshall would like to speak.
You want to jump in on that?
No, I thought.
It will be outside of the setback, just inside the property line.
It's right out here at the corner. I figured it out.
But it's not in the right-of-way. It's
right.
In the property.
It's in the property right out at the corner.
Right. Exactly.
And then there's another one as you go in.
Right.
Which is also out of the right-of-way.
Right.
Neither one of them appear to impact site distance.
It would be in the landscape setback goes clear to the property line, doesn't it?
Correct. So it would be within the landscape
kind of within
setback.
The landscape. It'll be sitting a sign there on the corner. Okay.
I did find a slide that shows where the leach area is. And see the little white, this white building here? It's about an acre site that's in this area.
Thank you, Ms. Nall. Appreciate that.
And I apologize. I meant to have that, but I didn't.
Anything further, Commissioner Murphy?
I guess not. I'm just
okay.
I'm a little slightly concerned about the water calculation, for future projects and the precedent we're setting using
I'd like to draw a distinction between the calculation and the criteria for doing the calculation. I think what the board one thing I neglected when I'd like to amend my ex parte. I had noticed that I had received an email from Sue Luft, who is a member of the County Water Resources Advisory Committee. As you might expect, being on that water committee, she had some observations and questions about water. So I did not reply, however, to that email. Okay. I note that the site includes clubhouse, pools, banquet rooms, and says for use by resort guests. The events occurred to me. How does in the context of our proposed events ordinance, how does
no events?
No events. Okay, so. This.
There's no request for events outside of if I was a guest at this resort using the facilities, maybe having a banquet with other guests, but there's no request to hold weddings.
So you can't have 100 of your closest friends that might live outside the resort to and have a big party.
I guess we could ask the state that, but there's no...
you should have made a recording of that response, I think.
There's no request. There's no part of okay. this application is not...
So we're not conveying by approving this conditional use permit any sort
as
of
an event
right
area
for
center,
an event,
yes.
even notwithstanding these facilities. Okay. Are there any height limits to these projects? I note the two iconic...
I believe we're preempted from that. County has height.
That's another one of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
The state also preempts the color choice.
Yeah, I remembered the color. I couldn't find the height part, though. Okay. Let's see. I'd like to talk about the berm a minute. That is part of a requirement for the area standard, correct? And that is being requested that there be no berms on the project, right?
Correct.
And could you just summarize why it's important or it's better not to have a berm and comply with better not to have a berm rather than complying with the standard and having a berm?
I believe the standard was written for different types of commercial uses where you would have a parking lot adjacent to a road and you would use the berm feature, and they were in vogue in probably the 80s. Now we're finding they create runoff issues, they're hard to plant, they're really not a great landscaping tool. For this particular site, in that 40-foot setback, which is where the berm would be required, they're actually doing a vegetative swale, which is opposite of a berm, and that will be for drainage and LID.
So if the commission were to insist on a berm, then that would compromise somewhat the drainage.
It could. It would require a redesign of a drainage and have another look at the LID features.
Okay. And it's not that berms are bad in every case. There are situations where they are effective to block for visual, and they do work. In this particular case, probably not so effective.
Okay.
So if your commission, we do need to add a little language to finding G to insert the word landscape berm. That specific finding talks about...
All right, after my questions, then perhaps you can dictate that change for the record. Okay, we talked about the water. Oh, I should say Ms. Luff's email noted that in the negative declaration, part of the county criteria included what she considered to be softer approaches towards offsets, such as contributing to a conservation program. I can't put my finger on them right now. But those were not options that we're using for this particular project. It's a much more certain payback as far as offsets, the criteria that we're using for this project.
Right, and no offsets were required as a result of the water use.
Exactly, right. As part of the calculations, I should have said. Okay. Let's see. Okay, we talked about that.
There are greater than 2 feet in depth and have steeper than 5-to-1 side slopes. The western basin.
Well, that's all right. So
one yes, one no. The other one.
The issue of safety of these basins has been addressed.
Yes.
Is that correct? Okay, that's all I wanted to verify. Thank you, Mr. Tomlinson. Let's see, just a couple more stickers here to check. Yeah, that had to do with the detention basins. That did as well. Oh, I see. On this very nice rendering here, some parking, and I note there are just vehicles, no RVs parked here. Will this RVs not be permitted to
to park here, and there's not space for them anyway, presumably. So, okay. And then this offset area here, that's the, where these RVs are stacked on Vineyard Way, that still maintains the vegetative screening. Because I realize this is a small-scale drawing, and it's a really thin thin line, but it could very well be 10 feet. But it was in marked contrast to the rest of the whole length of the property.
According to the site plan, it looks like there is no landscaping in that area.
Well,
where the RVs would be stacked.
Well, then that doesn't comply with the condition where...
We don't regulate this side of the park.
Well, okay, I misspoke. Not condition, but what the applicant said, I believe, was that was all going to be screened with 10 foot all the way around. I thought I did read that in your report somewhere, but... Anyway,
just to clarify, the property that's adjacent, also owned by the applicant, there's a 10-foot landscape strip there with landscape against the building, so we're using that as the landscape. There is landscape there.
There is landscape.
There is.
Okay.
But it'd be off-site. It's on the...
But it's effectively screened. Okay. On page 2-105 of the staff report is an environmental health... Our Department of Building and Planning to Environmental Health. And there's a note at the bottom that says the off-site septic should be properly destroyed and an on-site septic system to be used. Did you address that, or did I miss it?
That would, again, it's the very elaborate wastewater discharge system that's approved by the state. So if there are septic systems for the existing restaurant and there was a residence on the site, those need to be destroyed.
Okay, that's what that's referring to. Okay, thank you. And you were incorporating, I think, CAL FIRE's letter, were you, in the conditions?
Yes, and CAL FIRE has to sign off on the state application.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone, for your responses to my questions. I think we've covered it. I think we've covered public concerns pretty much by Commissioner Irving. I don't see any other requests to speak by commissioners. So, Mr. Irving.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to say that I think this project's going to be a real improvement to the north side of Paso Robles and along the 101 corridor. It's going to be one of the first projects that I think I've seen along there that it will, in fact, be landscaped the way it should be. I had had a question of staff about the condition of approval for landscaping, and I was assured that the requirement for that landscaping to be maintained for the life of the project is built into the project. So that was a concern I had that was carefully answered. I think this is going to be a great-looking project, and I welcome it. To that, I do remain and do continue to have the concern about the traffic issue, and I just hope that Caltrans is correct in their assessment of things. Yes. So I can just say that, incorporate that in my motion. Can I? So,
well, she hasn't given it.
You were going to come up with some additional language for finding G.
I just wanted to add after the first paren or comma, I'll read RV park use
condition 5.
Can I clarify that condition real quick? Because I believe condition 5, so we were going to replace 50 with 100, but I believe the 100 only applies to Highway 101.
No, it's along Wellsona and
is that
101.
I just wanted to clarify.
But the,
is it both?
That was my intent.
Okay.
And the two trees for every 25 feet, that's being supplanted or supplemented by the actual landscape plan, I understand.
It's exceeded, yes.
So do you want to modify that language to match the language landscape plan? That would make it clearer.
That would.
For a successor.
Okay. Would someone like to articulate?
What? The actual planning standard along the front is only 50%. So we don't have to condition it for well zone if we don't want to.
No, I think the idea was all the way around, Wellsona and 101 will be 100% landscaped.
Well, that's what we've got. Okay.
Exactly.
Right.
And Commissioner Tarkin, do you
have... Per the landscape plan.
Per the landscape plan.
Yeah, and strike the language that that comes out of
two
the area planning standards. Yeah, 2 per 25. Okay.
You have that?
Ms. McDonald, are you clear on the... nature of the revised wording.
I think so. Perhaps I could read what I'm thinking it says into the record, and
good
then
idea.
If it needs to be changed, we can clarify. So 5A would read, a mix of evergreen and non-evergreen trees shall be planted per the landscape plan, period.
Yes.
All plants shall provide 100% screening along Wellsona Road and Highway 101 frontages?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent.
Thank you, Ms. McDonald.
So I believe maybe we need to just clarify the motion. That it includes this change.
That the approval of the conditional use permit and the conditions listed in Exhibit B on Condition 5A as amended today.
Second.
Okay, very good. Is there any other discussion from commissioners? Okay, I guess I'll just comment that siempre adelante, my Spanish is terrible, but I took 4 years of Latin, and perhaps that means always forward. All right. Ramona, please call the roll.
Commissioner Irving?
Yes.
Commissioner Christensen?
Yes.
Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Commissioner Topping?
Yes.
Chairperson O'Grady?
Yes. Motion passes unanimously. Congratulations to Mr. Marston, the applicant. Okay. Well, we're doing okay time-wise, so all that's left to do is I do need a motion to take all testimony and documents into the record.
So moved.
Second.
Can I have a second? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Then I'd like a motion to adjourn the meeting till the next regular meeting on January 26, 2012.
So moved.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you all, and good day.
Well done. First job.
Thank you.